A few seconds over, but they'll deal with that in the studio. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'll see you tomorrow right here on the Inside Scoop.
This is the Quality News Network. The Senate Judiciary Committee will vote Tuesday on President Bush's nominee for Attorney General Michael Mukasey, who has submitted nearly 200 pages of elaboration on his positions. However, Mukasey has reportedly not given a definitive answer on whether the controversial technique known as waterboarding is torture. Many Democrats have said it is illegal and they will not vote for him unless he categorically answers the question. The Democratic candidates running for president in 2008 took part in a televised debate last night in Philadelphia. Senator Barack Obama and former Senator John Edwards took on frontrunner Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. They challenged her candor and consistency. President Bush is trying to take the offensive against Congress in health care policy and other budget issues. He accused Democrats of supporting federalized health care instead of a free market approach that he favors. In Spain, 7 of the 28 people on trial for the 2004 Madrid train bombings were let off entirely, including one suspect who had allegedly bragged that he was the mastermind behind the blasts. However, 21 people were convicted on at least some of the charges. A 25-year-old man pleaded guilty today in connection with an alleged plot to attack soldiers at Fort Dix. He faces up to 5 years in federal prison. The five other men arrested in the case face more serious charges. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Defense Secretary Robert Gates announced that all State Department convoys in Iraq will now be under U.S. military control. This is the latest step following the recent shooting incident that killed 17 Iraqis involved the private security company Blackwater, which protects American diplomats in Iraq. A boy younger than the age of 13 playing with matches has admitted to accidentally starting one of the recent devastating Southern California wildfires. The blaze destroyed 21 homes and consumed more than 38,000 acres. The case will be presented to the district attorney's office. The San Francisco Bay Area was hit with a 5.6 magnitude earthquake last night. It was the largest quake since the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake. There were no reports of serious injuries or damage. One of President Bush's longtime political advisors announced she is leaving her government post at the end of the year. Karen Hughes has been working as the Undersecretary of State to improve the U.S. image overseas. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business Next.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful Central Coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for: quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping, charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway, carmel.com.
NASA is facing two problems at the International Space Station, including a ripped solar wing. However, today NASA canceled a spacewalk scheduled for tomorrow to work on the damage and pushed it back until Friday. Tropical storm Noel is responsible for at least 60 deaths in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. It is going across Cuba and headed toward Florida. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has announced that Toys R Us has recalled 16,000 Chinese-made Elite Operations military-style toys because of possible lead contamination. Today is the last day for talks before a possible strike between the Hollywood writers and producers. The main issue is the amount of money the writers will get from the sale of DVDs and other digital distribution of television shows. The Federal Reserve met today and decided to cut the key interest rate by a quarter of a percentage point. It is now 4.5%. The Commerce Department reports over the summer the U.S. economy grew at a 3.9% rate, the fastest pace in a year and a half. Gold is trading at $796 even an ounce. Light sweet crude has been trading above the $94 a barrel mark, currently at $94.53 on the New York Mercantile Exchange and near the close of Wall Street today. The Dow Jones up 131 points, the NASDAQ up 40, and the S&P 500 up 18. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Bell, howdy. It is, of course, the Halloween edition of the Head On with Vlad Kincaid. I'm Vlad, and I'm very, very happy to have you along with me on this most joyous of holidays. Blah. Okay, enough of that. It is Halloween, and I hope you all have a wonderful and a safe one. No burning down any neighborhoods, you guys, please. Okay, thank you. But I guess the karmic forces come together and the magic of the calendar rolls around, and so we get not just Halloween, but Halloween.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
That's right, it's a prayer meeting edition of Halloween right here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, and I'm glad you could be along for the ride, whether you're listening live, whether you're listening via podcast or the archives, listening at one of the numerous places this stream is available, be it iTunes Radio, Receiva.com, Phonostar.com, or on the embedded players at our dear friends WD40.com or AfterDowningStreet.org. We're getting around. And we're going to continue to get around. Just to let you know that I'm trying to do my part here, and it's Halloween. We're going to fall short again this month, but, you know, it's not for want of you guys trying. God knows it's not for want of you guys trying. We'll end the month about $300 to the bad, so that puts our hole at about $1,300 now. But it's not for the want of trying, and God knows how grateful I am that you do try. And, you know, we're going to keep on doing and doing and doing and just trying to make things happen. So don't worry. Okay, that's the trick part, I guess, of our trick-or-treat edition here. But to let you know that I am doing my part, I'm out there beating on doors, and I'm hoping to have a meeting with somebody who might be able to direct me towards some venture capital here in the coming weeks. And if that happens, maybe I can quit bothering you guys, and we'll... Uh, find a find some more funding. That is certainly my my joy, my dream, and my hope. Let's see. Tonight, Halloween. You know, I don't have any cyber candy to give away, but I do have a couple little things that I hope you will enjoy, or at least be pleasantly deranged by. A reading from Off the Beaten Path for the last half hour of the program, if you're up for that. And something else, and let's get this out of the way since it is prayer meeting. Something else. Something that was provided to me by our news ninja, Gene. And this is, I don't know, you know, let's see. Oh, wait, before we go much further, I have to tell you the official Halloween joke. What did the possessed chicken say? That's right, pluck me, pluck me, pluck me. And this Halloween trick comes from something called God Tube. The line underneath says, broadcast him. That's right, God is unable to broadcast. He has to be broadcasted. And the lead into this says, the letter from hell is a dramatic presentation that is designed to motivate Christian students to share their faith in Christ. Hell is a scary place, and this is a scary presentation. So, the letter from hell, from God Tube.
What if you had a friend who died without knowing Jesus as their personal Savior? What if he or she went to hell? What if one day you received a letter in the mail from beyond? A letter from hell. A letter from your friend in the flames of eternal torment. The following is a dramatic presentation. It was written by a fictitious high school student named Josh to a friend named Zach. Although Zach had every opportunity to tell Josh about Jesus, he didn't.
It was scary, ain't it?
They played soccer together, they went to classes together, they partied together, they shared their lives with each other. But there was one thing Zach held back from Josh. His personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
He held it back. He wasn't going to share.
The story is simple and sad. A few too many beers.
It always begins that way, doesn't it? A few too many beers.
A death. A funeral. A letter.
A letter.
Here is that letter in its entirety. A letter from hell.
Well, come on, deliver the letter. The sooner the better.
Dear Zach, I died today. It's a lot different than I expected. You see, I always thought dying would bring me into a world that's foggy and hazy.
Really?
But this place is crystal clear. It's even more real than my life on Earth. I can think, I can talk, I can even feel. Right after the wreck, I could feel my spirit leaving my body. It was the weirdest thing, Zach. I thought I heard you screaming out to me, man. I must have been just imagining things. At first, I was just standing in line, getting registered, I guess. They asked me for my name.
They didn't know it.
The book, this thing they called the Book of Life. I guess they couldn't find it, though, because this huge angel standing next to me grabbed me by the arm and started dragging me away. I was terrified. I had no idea what was going on. I asked the angel where he was taking me, but he didn't answer. So I asked him again. Finally, he told me.
Nope, sorry, it's not here.
Whose names were written in the Book of Life could enter into heaven. And the rest would be condemned to hell forever. Man, I was scared. The angel threw me into some kind of holding cell where I've been sitting and thinking for a long, long time. Do you want to know what I've been thinking about?
Not really.
I've been thinking about you.
Really? Me?
Zach, you're a Christian.
Zach!
You told me so yourself. I mean, we talked about it 3 different times
today. You jerk!
Kelly brought it up, and you laughed it off. Coach Adams brought it up, and you changed the
Coach
subject.
Adams?
I mean, it came up right before the wreck. Well, the question I can't get out of my mind is this, Zach. Why haven't you ever told me about how to become a Christian? I mean, you say you're my friend, but if you really were, you would have told me about this Jesus, and told me how to escape this terrible place that I'm headed for. I can feel my heart pounding in my chest. The angels who have been chosen to cast me into hell are coming down the hallway. I can hear their footsteps.
It's about a size 22 foot,
isn't it? Zach. I call it the lake of fire. I can't stand it, Zach. I'm terrified. No, the angels are at the door. Oh, no. No!
Who's got my golden arm?
And they're pointing at me. They're grabbing me and carrying me out of the room. I can already smell the burning sulfur and brimstone. I can see the edge of the cliff where hell burns. This is it. I am without hope. We're coming closer, closer, closer. My heart is bursting with fear. They're holding me over the flames. I'm down forever.
They're basting me.
They have thrown me in. Fire. Pain. Hell. Why, Beth? Why didn't you ever tell me about Jesus?
Oh, Jesus. There's Jerry Falwell. He's trying to take my pants off. Oh! Oh, P.S.
Wish you were here.
Yeah, wish you were here. Forgot about the wish you were here part. Welcome to Fundyville. Welcome to the way these people think. The way that... Look at the magic spookery. There's a... I thought when I died it would be like a foggy, cloudy place. Yeah, what? Like San Francisco on a... Gee whiz. But, you know, could you even begin to sit down and talk to these people? Of course you couldn't. So there's your spooky thing for Halloween. Are y'all scared? Do I need to tell you about Jesus? Maybe for this Halloween I'll tell you about Jesus. I'll tell you about a brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter who was the product of the womb of a little teenage girl who wasn't married, who was stigmatized by bastardy, and who, despite all that, grew up and looked at the world and figured out, you know, there's a better way. What if we all loved each other? But more than telling you about Jesus, I could tell you about the Emperor Constantine. I could tell you about the council that he convened to work out an orthodox religion where they invented a Trinity, where they invented a Virgin Mary. I could tell you about a former temple guard by the name of Saul, who was so tormented by the evil that he did that he had a psychotic break on the road to Damascus and imagined a guy that he'd never seen before, who started telling him stuff that the guy who actually lived never said. I can tell you about Jesus. I can tell you that the one thing he said that mattered more than any other is the greatest commandment after love thy God is love thy neighbor as thyself. I can tell you that he said love your enemies, and nobody seems to be into that these days. I can tell you about Jesus, but I'm sorry, there's no eternal barbecue pit. For a people who lived in a desert wasteland that was always miserably hot, hell came naturally. And outside the city gates of Jerusalem was a place called Sheol, where they dumped their garbage. And garbage being garbage, you know, they knew about biomass. Thank you, Mark Levine, for the global warming show before this one. They knew about biomass before they did, because they dumped all their garbage there. It began to ferment. It released methane gas, and it spontaneously combusted. And it seemed always to burn. And little Israelite mommies would tell their little Israelite children, now you get home before dark or you'll wind up in Sheol and you'll burn forever. And Sheol gets translated via from the Hebrew to the Aramaic to the Greek to the Latin to the English, and we get hell. And hell is, of course, occupied by the god Dionysus, who and some of his little splay-footed satyr friends, who have cloven hooves and the bodies of goats, but the torsos of men and little goat horns growing out of their head. But if you're going to work in a pit, if you're going to work in a place where there's spontaneous biomass combustion, you're also going to need a pitchfork to sort of move it around. Okay, so are we all done with the letter of hell? Letter from hell. You're all safe now. I've told you about Jesus. By the way, he wasn't blonde-haired and blue-eyed. Odds are, if he had come back in 1950s America, he would have had to use a separate water fountain. But don't try to tell white bread Southern Baptist Christianity that. They won't take too well to being told that they're worshiping a brown-skinned man. Because, after all, in the Southern Baptist Church, they're far more into blowing up brown-skinned men than worshiping them. Not that I think Yeshua ever had a particular interest in being worshipped. At least that's what he said, if what the books say is correct. But then again, the letters of St. Paul went into circulation before the Gospels did. You probably know that. So that most people, when they began to think that they were following Christ, Mark is the oldest book. It went into circulation considerably after the letters of St. Paul did, so that people who began to think they were following Christ had first heard about him through Paul, so everything they heard about Jesus was filtered through an insane man's mind. But that's just what it is. I mean, those are just facts. And, you know, when you're dealing with organized religion, facts. Oh, what did St. Reagan say? Facts are stupid things. Yeah. Let's go to the phone. Susan joins us. Happy Halloween.
Happy showing.
Same to you.
Blessed be.
And you as well.
I just thought you'd be interested in a little... a little piece of history that's basically all over the net.
Okay.
It seems that one of George's famous ancestors could pretty much count for the way he is.
Vlad the Impaler?
To Vlad the Impaler.
Mm-hmm. blood will tell, as the old saying goes.
Yeah. I mean, oh my God.
And of course, that's the liberal media, Susan. The liberal media won't tell you that Bill Clinton was related to the Marquis de Sade, but even if he wasn't, we like to think he was, you know, but no, they got to tell you that George Bush is related to Dracula. That's the liberal media. They hate America.
Yeah. Some of the things that have been put out on the net about Halloween and where it came from. Oh, my word.
Something gets under your skin, I take it?
Only in the sense that I cannot believe that the ignorance... Well, actually, I can believe it because people are willfully stupid. But Samhain comes, or Samhain, actually. A lot of people pronounce it Samhain. That's wrong. Marshall.
Yeah, it's, I guess it's one. It's one of those Celtic words where vowel consonants have different sounds than what we expect them to. So S A M H I A N becomes Samhain.
Uh huh. And it comes two Celtic words meaning end of the harvest, and basically the Samhain festival is a harvest festival.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a break here.
Now, granted, a few thousand years ago, that harvest festival included whomping a guy in the back of the head and throwing him in a peat bog. But you know what religion? What religion didn't have a little human sacrifice in it?
As far as the Wiccans were concerned, it didn't.
But the ancient Celtic societies certainly did.
Yeah. There are various subsets in that Celtic society.
Okay.
Yeah. The Druidic part of the Celts, they were into human sacrifice.
Yeah, I think the remains have been found in Northern Europe, Britain, Ireland, Scotland, France. And most frequently, they're very well preserved. Peat bogs are very good at turning people into sort of really wet, clammy mummies. Clammies. Let's call them clammies.
A clammy's gonna come get you.
I mean, and they're not pretty when they come out of there. Their skin's all tanned with darkened with the tannins in the peat and everything. But we can tell that, you know, they took a blow to the back of it. But you know, there's that, and there's the whole Fisher King myth where we kill the young male after he's fertilized all the females in spring. And we Northern Europeans don't exactly come from a peaceful past.
Oh no, heavens no! But you know, the whole thing is like there was one thing on the net that there was this demon that they said that ask.com.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody wanted to know the meaning of Halloween, so I looked at some of the answers, and one of them was that's when the Celts worshipped a demon named Samhain. And I'm sitting there going, oh, Lord, 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 Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, you ignorant. But read a history book.
I know. It's, yeah. And of course, there are still to this day fundamentalists who get really pissy about Halloween. And in fact, Halloween, its own word is the night before All Saints Day. Tomorrow, November 1st, is All Hallows Day.
Yeah. And so today is All Hallows Eve for the Northern European Christians.
Mm-hmm.
But,
of course, I like the way it's celebrated in Mexico, too, where, you know, because Roman Catholicism got overlaid on an ancient and rather bloodthirsty religion there. So that today and tomorrow, if I understand the traditions correctly, there's a big celebration, and you go and you have dinner with your dead loved ones in the cemetery.
Yeah.
And you know, you pass the tortillas and the mole and all of the yummy stuff, and they're just sitting right, and you set a plate for, you know, dear old dead Uncle Fred.
Well, I can think of worse things to do than ancestor worship, provided you don't get ridiculous about it the way the people on Easter Island did.
Yeah, you mean deforesting an entire island to set up big old stones? Sure.
You're right. You know, they wiped themselves out by ruining their ecology. That's carrying it a bit far. But, you know, provided you don't, if it's part of your life, you know, occasionally, say, you know, have dinner with Great Uncle Fred or Grandpa Jose or whatever, by all means, feel free.
Sure.
I think it's pretty nice tradition.
Yeah, I mean, it is in the nature of humankind, Susan, and you know this as well as I, to mark the turnings of the year. And this is one of those spring celebrations that got Easter laid over onto it. Of course, come from that pagan tradition as well. early man with only early humankind, let's not be sexist about this, early humankind had only the most tenuous grasp of the world in which they lived. And the things that appeared really, really important, such as when to get the food in and when to start planting the food, were occasioned and clothed in religious mysticism.
Yeah, and when to, you know, when to start praying for the sun to come back.
Yeah, now, hard to imagine a world in which we think that the sun goes away. But, you know, we're talking about people who didn't know the world was round. And so because somebody ate a pomegranate seed or something, you know, the spring had to, the living things had to disappear for 6 months. And, you know, it's as good an explanation as any.
Yeah.
It's as high quality an explanation as once upon a time there were only two of us and we lived in this lovely garden, but then this talking snake told my wife to eat an apple.
Yeah, I know. I still want to know. Who did Cain marry?
I know. And frankly, a lot of those ancient Hebrew traditions have answers for that. But we didn't get that in our translation, so we just kind of
have to.
Yeah.
And, you know, isn't
the Lilith myth somewhere in there, too?
Oh, yeah. The Lilith myth. Oh, yeah. Oh, I love the Lilith myth. You know,
the original feminist.
What?
The original feminist.
Yeah, but they transformed her into a demon.
Well, sure. And, you know, but I love those imaginings out of those ancient mythologies. I'm trying to remember who wrote the book The Red Tent. It was just a beautiful thing. Anita Diamant. The Red Tent, looking at women's lives in sort of a just barely post-Abrahamic culture, and it's imagined from the point of view of the only daughter of Jacob who gets mentioned once, and her name is Dina, D-I-N-A-H, Dina, and it's a gorgeous book, and it explains and makes perfect sense out of a fairly senseless part of the book of Genesis.
Uh-huh.
Where Jacob and his tribe go down and slaughter an entire city after telling them that they had to be circumcised, and then instead they go down and murder them.
Fun.
Yeah, nice folks.
Yeah.
But
nice
then
folks,
again,
yeah.
But then again, you know, your ancestors and mine were probably nobody that we would want to sit down to dinner with.
Oh, hey, I'm descended from three of the most belligerent people on the planet. Vikings, Germans, and Scots. I'm in no position to throw stones at anybody.
No. No, and, you know, what's the legend that, or the proto-history of the dedication of the Great Pyramid at Tenochtitlan, which is now Mexico City, that some 28,000 people were sacrificed by having their beating hearts ripped out of their chest in one day?
Something like that.
So
yeah, that particular religion made absolutely no bones about the fact they were heavy into human sacrifice.
Right. And
you know, there was none of this.
God told them to.
Yeah, there was none of this horn god thing, you know, like very, very rarely would they sacrifice things like in the Northern European. They just did it on a wholesale basis.
Yeah.
You know, and it, whew.
And they had different ways of killing people. It was, you know, the Green Corn Festival and the Deer One Flayed. I can't remember the Nahuatl word for it. But they'd flay the skin off of somebody and then take all the meat and the bones out and put the skin on and then go dancing around in the skin. Yeah. Charming.
Yeah. Which is, yeah.
But, you know, we're white and we're all civilized now, we prefer to forget our brutal past, and instead we take something like Halloween and you know, give away candy and overlay Roman Catholic mythology on it. And say, see, We're not mean and nasty and bloodthirsty and self-killing anymore. No, no, we're civilized. But, you know, Halloween... You know, Halloween doesn't come into celebration. Well, let's see. All Saints Day was fixed as November 1st, 835 A.D. All Souls Day was November 2nd, around 998 A.D., according to the fine folks at Wikipedia.
Yeah, and the Wiccans were following the Solon long before that.
Oh, sure.
So, but, you know, as far as forgetting our ancestry, let's face it, if I only went by the Vikings alone, hey, they raped and murdered their way up and down the entire European coastline to the point where they actually got tossed off the Danish peninsula. These were not nice people.
No. And, you know, pity the poor schmuck who draws the short straw that year.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You know, it's straight out of Monty Python. I'm feeling very better, very much better. I'll be better tomorrow. No, you won't. You're feeling very ill. Whack!
Yeah. But, you know, pity the poor schmuck who ended up in these guys' sights.
Sure.
You know, like, pity the poor schmucks in these towns in England and Ireland and Spain. Because those long ships, they started showing up, and, man, they went to town.
Yeah, cancel Christmas.
Yeah, cancel everything. Yeah, these guys were not nice. And that's just the Vikings. Let's not even talk about the Germans and the Celts.
Well, the Celts had for all their head-whacking predilections, had a beautiful culture. I forget who wrote the book, but there's a gorgeous book called The Celts. It's just called The Celts. And it documents the fact that it was really quite the monolithic culture that spread from Eastern Europe and the Danube, you know, all the way to the outer Hebrides of Scotland.
Yeah, they did.
And the thing, and you know, there's a lesson there, and our good friend Eugene Finnerman would probably be handy in this one too. We were talking about Julius Caesar the other evening. And Caesar was from a relatively poor family. As Eugene noted, he got his entree into Roman polite society by virtue of a brother-in-law named Gaius Marius. And Caesar wanted, you know, his own consulship, and he wanted, but all of this stuff took a lot of money. And so he had to... No, he couldn't marry it. He married, but, you know, that no, not really. No, he had to go out and drum up a war. And this is the, you know, if you take your Latin in high school, sooner or later you get dosed up with Galliae est omnis divisae in partes tres, or something like that. The whole of Gaul is divided into three parts, and that's the opening line to the Gallic Wars, which he writes in third person. God knows he, you know, no ego there. And then Caesar conquered the Belgae. But what it was is, it was the Roman Republic said, okay, Julius, go have yourself a war with somebody who hasn't really done anything to us lately. Because in the last 75 or 100 years before Caesar, there had been a couple of occasions when Gallic tribes had come down into what was called Transalpine Alpine Gaul, which was a Roman province, and laid waste the place. So the Romans had this morbid terror, and that's the appropriate word, I think, this morbid terror of being attacked by the terrorists, who were called Gauls. And Julius Caesar, desperate for money, and the only way he could get the money was to go plunder somebody. That's the way you made money back then.
Yeah.
Stirred it up and told the Roman Republic, we have to fight them there so we don't have to fight them here.
Jeez, that sounds familiar, don't it?
Yeah, it sure does. So he goes off, and this entire, and he lays waste the vast majority of Celtic culture. You know, you and I have no real idea what Druidic religion was, the religion of our forebears, because Julius Caesar killed all the Druids, and the ones he didn't get to, the Claudius did. cut down all the sacred groves and literally destroyed an entire culture in order to make enough money to come back and hold political office. And that's part of why, in my conversation with Eugene a couple of nights ago, I pointed out that the Julians really, really bear a striking resemblance to the Bushes.
Uh-huh.
Ne'er-do-wells, not the best of folks, but ruthlessly determined to lay waste and control their nation.
And they were basically the ones who started the ball rolling downhill.
Yeah, I mean, the Roman Catholic Church didn't wipe out my ancient religion. Julius Caesar did.
Yeah.
But for those for any religions left over after that, after Constantine starts the Christian Church, or what orthodoxizes it, then all bets are off and nobody's safe.
Mm-hmm. Who was it? Was Hadrian's Wall built?
When?
Mm-hmm.
I run out of steam trying to keep up with the emperors that far in, but second or third century AD, you know, to keep the Picts out of nice civilized Roman Britain, and the Picts, those would have been, you know, you and me, our people.
Yeah.
Every time
I know that they built the wall as an alternative to trying to conquer basically the Highlands, because they figured we can't have all these dudes.
Well, they marched in, looked around. What's the use? Who'd have it? You know, let's just build a wall and keep them out. Every time I hear the word Pict or see the word Pict, I think of that wonderful, wonderful Pink Floyd song, several species of small furry animals grooving in a cave with a Pict. Sorry, it's just a sad and twisted way that my mind works.
One of these days, I'll have to email you a joke I heard, I can't remember where, about the Hadrian's Wall and the Romans. It's cute. But it's too long to say over the air.
Okay.
It's even clean.
Well, darn, I hate it when they're clean and we can't tell them.
But, the whole thing with the Julians was, as far as I'm concerned, and this is basically my own opinion, they set up the fall of the Roman Empire.
Sure they did. You know, Pompey and Crassus, Marcus Licinius Crassus, had a little bit to do with it, too. But there's a lot to be learned there, and I think that's part of the reason we don't teach it so much anymore, because if people actually learned their ancient history, they'd look up and go, oh, well,
yeah,
the movie's playing again.
Yeah,
that's Angela Anderson, the extremely intelligent, very clearly spoken woman who was on Mark's show in the previous hour, talking about, you know, ice cores, and how ice cores are like 122 A.D. Thank you, Georgie Porgy, in the chat room. Hadrian's Wall, 122 A.D. But she was talking about the ice cores and how they're just like tree rings, and they'll tell you what was going on the planet for a long, long time. Well, the Roman Republic went absolutely hog wild, run over dog crazy for money when they realized there was some money out there. For a long time, the Roman Republic just sort of stayed to itself, fought back the Carthaginians. You know, it was Macy's and Gimbel's, you know, right across the Mediterranean,
right,
from each other. But then they conquered Carthage and got a bunch of money out of it, and they realized that the whole world was just one great big pile of money waiting to be plundered. And then they discovered silver in Spain.
And then they practically polluted the entire planet with it.
They damn near did, because the ice cores from Greenland, I mean, you know, look at the map. Here's Spain, here's Greenland. And they deforested Spain, because they still didn't burn coal. They deforested Spain, smelting the silver that they had mined out of the Spanish silver mines.
Mm-hmm.
And the smoke that they poured into the air from those smelting operations is evident in the ice cores of Greenland. And yet at the same time, you'll have, you know, Flush Flimball or Hannity or one of those freaks on the air. Oh, there's no evidence that man can actually affect the climate of the earth.
Not
liar.
Not sure, Roman.
Right, and you know, and you can get away with saying that stuff if you're not educating the people on their basic history. And you know what? Roman history is our history.
Yeah.
Because Roman history is the history of Europe. It's, frankly, it's the history of Israel. It's the history of Mesopotamia. Everywhere that the Romans put their footprint becomes the Roman history.
It makes me crazy because they don't teach history anymore in the schools. They teach social studies. And I just about fell off the chair when my daughter was in high school. She was a senior, and I happened to ask her, when are they going to be covering the Holocaust? And she goes, huh?
No, that would be not.
And I just about lost it. I made a point. She knew what the Holocaust was and the whole nine yards. But the school never taught it to her. I did.
I know. You know, we see these units come up, and we try to augment them with our own kids here, Susan, because I look in their history book, and it's several pictures and 2.5 paragraphs of text.
Yeah.
So, well, no, it was George Santayana who said, "Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it." Guess what we're doing?
Yeah, and I have a feeling that that's what for one thing, I don't think they believe that, but they're setting us up to dumb down the schools to the point where we can't help but repeat it because we never knew it. Unless you're people like us who had the smarts to teach your own children.
And frankly, I'm not a proponent of homeschooling because I know how much it takes to run a household. You know, we do that. And frankly, I'm sitting here, I've got a doctoral level education. I am not a stupid man. My wife has a college education. Not a stupid woman. But you know what? We could not do. We are simply incapable of providing a broad-based, fully rounded education to our children because we live in America. And it is tough to maintain a home and do everything. Am I making an excuse or am I making any sense?
You're making a lot of sense.
So I believe in a public education system. Meanwhile, do you remember our good friends Max Blumenthal and Thomas Shoemaker that were on the program a few months back with their trip to the Kufi, the Kufi Festival? Remember that video?
Uh-huh.
Showed the woman dancing like she was at a Dead concert to, well, yeah, they've got another movie.
Oh, dear.
They went to the Values Summit a couple of weeks ago, funded and sponsored and put on by the right-wing religion industry, and shot some video. I imagine Thomas and or Max will be on the program fairly soon, but I'm going to try to run some of the audio from it. Their new movie is up. I don't know if it's on YouTube yet, but it hit Huffington Post first.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to Huffington Post and just search bloggers and search for Max Blumenthal, you'll see the movie. I'm going to run some of the audio maybe this evening. And curl your hair.
Yeah.
Because at one point there's a fellow who says, I don't believe in public education. Churches ought to be in charge of education.
God help us all.
Well, we know what happens when churches are in charge of education. You hear about things like the world being flat.
Trials will be starting shortly.
Yeah.
The average American can't, take care of the kids' education. But the thing is, the textbooks that I used for my junior high school history classes are now considered college level.
I know. Absolutely.
And when we start forgetting history, we're doomed.
Well, when we forget our history, we foreclose our future.
Yeah, we may as well.
Oh, that was profound, wasn't it?
What?
That was profound, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Thank you.
We may as well lock up the doors and throw away the keys, because we're pretty much SOL.
Yep, last human out, turn off the lights, please, if you can still remember how to turn the lights off. Look, the beginning, have you seen Idiocracy yet, Susan?
No.
See that movie. It's Mike Judge. It's the same guy who did Office Space and, you know, Beavis and Butthead. The beginning of that movie makes more sense, and it's a comedy. But it makes sense as a vision of the future of this country. And I'm not going to give it away. If you get a chance, just watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get a giggle all the way through it. It's pretty funny. But it's about an America that dumbs itself down. And how we get dumbed down. And most of that is laid out in the very beginning of the film. I've got a blinking light here, Susan. I'm going to see if there's anybody else on it. I love our little trips down history lane, though. I think they're good for us.
Have a nice night and
happy Samhain to you.
Too scared.
Yeah, and you going to build a little fire tonight?
Yeah.
Okie doke. Just checking. I think maybe we will too. We've got a bunch of brush piled up. My son-in-law is a brush cutting fiend. So maybe some of that'll get burned tonight.
Well, you give Agnes and tell her blessed be.
I sure will. You take care, Susan.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye now. All right. Let's see. Anybody here?
Hello.
Hey.
How you doing?
Doing good, Jim. How about you?
Reasonably well. I can barely hear you, though.
Any better?
Not a whole lot, but I can...
Any better?
A little bit better, yeah.
Any better?
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Five by five.
Great.
Happy All Hallows Eve to you.
And to you as well.
And...
Have your trick-or-treaters come by yet tonight?
Oh, yeah. I have two that I live with, so, I mean, they've been tricking and treating all day.
The four-legged variety.
Mm-hmm. You got it. No, I was just listening to part of your conversation about the Roman. You got to give Rome credit for one thing. She gave as good as she got. I mean, when it came to dealing with the likes of Vercingetorix and Queen Boudica, they didn't exactly, well, let me put it this way. They weren't exactly given everything that they took. And Rome did represent a great civilizing force in the world. They really did. I have a lot of respect for the Roman Empire.
Well, for the
I don't particularly enjoy how they amuse themselves.
For the Republic, I have more respect than I do for the Empire.
Well, the Empire was great. It was bound to happen. And, you know, it had to. It had to. It had to expand. If not, it would collapse in on itself. And they were right about it. If they didn't fight them there, they'd have to fight them in Rome, which they later had to do, you know, when they later had to withdraw. And, you know, the Roman Empire, like all other entities made of men, you know, it had its birth, it had its conception, and then it had its adolescence and its growth and its development, and then its full strength, and then it began to grow old, and eventually it was murdered. Rome was literally murdered almost by those barbarian tribes that came in, and at least the Western Empire was. But it did represent a great deal of civilizing influence. And people, for example, in Roman Britain certainly lived a lot better and had a higher standard of living in Roman Britain. But when they had to recall the legions, the legionaries no longer banned the Hadrians or the Antonine Walls. And Roman Britain's just sort of collapsed in on itself. I believe it lasted, 400 years, roughly?
You know, Julius Caesar went there, Jim, but he didn't stay.
No, he had a rough time. They gave him a rough time.
And it was Claudius who went, And let's see, it goes Augustus, Tiberius.
Nero was there, too. Or
well, Claudius established the beachhead and really began the civilizing influence, and other emperors followed on his heel. Nero followed Claudius.
And I think it was under Claudius when the Romans had some of their roughest times, because I know they had one type of revolt in there in which these native Britons, oh, God, they literally destroyed all these cities. The name begins with a C, and I can't remember it. It was completely destroyed. I mean, good God. And, of course, the Romans had to, they barely held on to that one until they could get reinforcements from the mainland. But nonetheless, the conquest of Roman Britain was not easily done. But, you know, Bob, they didn't completely eliminate all the Druids. I mean, there were isolated enclaves of the Druids where the Romans did not penetrate. And I'm not sure what their religious policy was. And I think basically it wasn't their policy. If you paid lip service to the emperor and paid your taxes, they basically didn't give a rodent's derriere what you did.
Well, that's true.
And in that way, there was a degree of toleration that, you know, as long as you rendered unto Caesar what was Caesar, so to speak.
Yeah, pay your taxes and keep your head down.
Yeah, well, that's the way it is. I think that's the way it is everywhere, don't you think?
The Druids, you know, the Druidic religion was wiped out to the extent that it was unable to pass itself on to later generations, so that we're hard-pressed to know exactly what their practices were. You know, we know they had their sacred groves. We know that older Celtic peoples, older than, say, at the time of the Empire, we know that they did practice human sacrifice.
Mm-hmm, they did.
From the bog people. You know, there's a cord, there's a garrote around his neck, and a really ugly broken place in the back of his head.
Right. We certainly can't cast any aspersions on them in favor of Rome, because, my God, when they first opened the Colosseum, I don't know how many animals were just slain for the hell of it, and how many people were just murdered.
Yeah, and many people don't. That's one.
This is at the very core of the Roman civilization, which is, you know, there's such an ambivalence there. I mean, to me, Rome represented such civilization on one side of the coin, but on the other, the barbarism and what they consider to be an afternoon of sport and fun were just so horrible. And just totally repugnant.
But again, that's part of the mindset of the ancient world, because you can find that all the world over. If you go into the jungles of the Yucatan, you can find those Mayan ball courts.
Oh, yeah, where they played and the winning team would lose.
Their heads or their hearts.
Definitely. And how they got that little ball of rubber through that small hole is beyond me. I don't know.
Well, it's my understanding there were goals at either end, but if you got the ball through the hole high up on the wall, it was game over immediately, because some god had smiled on you. It was almost impossible to do.
This is just amazing, and you know, but you know, I always operate under one axiom. What's one man's religion is another man's superstition, and vice versa. And I'll leave it at that.
Well, that's fair enough. You mentioned the Colosseum, though. That's one of the things that drives me a little bit crazy, is the evidence of what people don't know about that ancient civilization. You know, if you go and you look on fundamentalist sites and things like that, Jim, you'll see statements to this day about how, you know, Christians were slaughtered in the Colosseum. The Christians were slaughtered in the Circus Maximus. The Colosseum hadn't been built yet. The Flavian Amphitheater far postdates the Circus Maximus. And, in fact, the Christian persecutions that are so-called of Nero weren't. Wholesale persecution of Christianity didn't come along until several emperors later.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Nero was trying to root out a terrorist group that had burned down Rome.
Well, he allegedly... the Christians.
Yeah, well, because there was a reference.
Had he not burned it down because he wanted to just make a whole new city out of it?
Well, he did say, I found Rome a city of wood and I left it a city of marble,
or
something along those lines.
And of course, he built this great house and had the huge lake there, but I don't think he lived to enjoy it very long. What, 4 months?
Something along those lines, yeah, because he went a little daft.
He went daft on a big. As a matter of fact, he nearly broke the Empire Building, that whole complex that he lived in,
and there
Blake there and had revolving ceilings, and it was because his Golden House, I guess,
The Domus Aureus, yeah, exactly. But there's a reference in the history of the time that said that the fire of Rome was started by the followers of, and it's the spelling is weird, the followers of Crestus, Chrestus, and of course Christ being a Greek term and certainly not a Hebrew or an Aramaic one, there was a Crestus of the Month Club in Rome at the time because new messiahs were popping up, just about as quickly as new pop stars do here in our culture.
But in Rome, there was a resurgence now of a number of religions. And, for example, the Egyptian religion, the worship of Isis, was particularly popular. And also the worship of Mithras was very popular, particularly among Roman soldiers.
Mm-hmm. The Mithras cult was among the... I believe women were quite fond of the Eleusinian mysteries.
Well, those... I'm sure, but those are the ones that come to mind. And of course, the Christian religion was definitely not favored because they would not pay obeisance to the emperor. I think that was one of the reasons that.
That comes along a little bit later, Jim, because
when Paul was writing one of his letters or something, and to Corinth, the Corinthians were doing pretty well with their Roman masters. But of course, they did so by going to the temple and the emperor, and that was one of the things that Paul was pretty upset about, I believe.
Well, Paul is writing, and this is worth remembering.
One or the other.
Paul is writing in a pre-Neronian Rome, and so that's why you have all those protestations on his account to how pious and upstanding and law-abiding that the followers of Christ are. And that's why he writes things that he does, like, what's the line about power on earth is vested from God, and so if someone holds power on earth, they hold it by God, and it is therefore necessary to give the due to the secular powers.
You're getting into the divine right of kings.
Well, that's all pre-Neronian writing, though. And so you don't get into the blistering attack on Rome that is the Book of Revelations is post Nero, and so it's an entirely different mindset.
Yeah, there are a number of schools of thought about that. We could just go on ad infinitum about that, but to me, in retrospect, Rome did represent a lot of good things. And if you basically obeyed the law, paid your taxes, and didn't go out of your way to really offend anyone, you could benefit immensely by the protection of the Roman legions. And, of course, if you were a Roman citizen, you had rights under the law, and laws became codified. And like I say, one side of them was extremely well-behaved and very, very well-civilized, and then on the other hand, you have another dichotomy of that civilization, which was just barbaric beyond, means. I remember in the Colosseum when I think it was almost at twilight, but anyway, I was just trying to think, my God, what in the world went on here? And you could almost hear in my mind's ear the screams of animals and the roars of the crowds.
Oh well, the
when I later went up to the old, went up the old, and saw the the old the Kaiser, not the Kaiser, but the field outside Nuremberg. I had the same feeling.
Yeah, you can hear the roars.
The steps, and you could almost imagine the pageantry and the spectacles that occurred there, It's just amazing when you go to these solitary stones or ruins, and you imagine what happened there. It's almost almost more than the mind can absorb.
It is, and I've had similar experiences on top of mounds at Native American North American mound complexes, you can almost let your mind drift back and hear the very voices themselves. Jim, we're at the news, but thank you very much. I, you know, every now and then I go off on one of these ancient history tangents, and it's always good to have somebody to take the trip with.
Well, I think that's very healthy for your program. I really do. It certainly is better than to, you know what I'm saying. It takes your mind off certain things and that you really can't do a whole lot about, you know?
True enough. Thank you, Jim, and a very happy Halloween to you.
Yeah, well, same to you and your family. To All Saints Day and All Souls the following. By the way, the El Dia de los Muertos comes up when in Mexico? Isn't that around the 4th or the 3rd or the 4th?
I think it's either the 2nd or the 3rd.
All right. And then, of course, in Great Britain, you've got November 4th, Guy Fawkes Day.
True, yep.
So you get your fireworks ready, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care, Jim. Bye now. That's just fun. And when we come back from the news, more conversation coming your way. I should have had some better music queued up tonight, but we'll find something. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. Yeah, that's got some kind of pagan rhythm to it. I can work with this. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill, the Senate Judiciary Committee votes early next week on the White House nominee for Attorney General Michael Mukasey. Congressional Democrats say they're waiting to hear Mukasey's legal opinion on a form of torture known as waterboarding. So far, they say he has not provided his clear stance on the issue. Many Democrats say they will not vote for him unless he fully answers the question. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Defense Secretary Robert Gates announcing that all State Department convoys in Iraq will now be under U.S. military control. It is the latest step taken as part of an investigation into the shooting deaths of 17 Iraqi civilians involving Blackwater USA. President Bush says he'll again veto legislation expanding the federal children's health insurance program if the bill contains an increase in tobacco tax. Congress proposes paying for the $35 billion increase with tobacco taxes, including an extra 61 cents on each pack of cigarettes. The Federal Reserve met today, deciding to cut the key interest rate by 0.25 percentage point. Key rate now at 4.5%. That's down from the previous 4.75% rate. Democratic presidential frontrunner Hillary Clinton took some heat from her rivals during last night's televised debate held in Philadelphia. Senator Barack Obama and former Senator John Edwards both challenged Clinton's consistency and candor, especially on the question of driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. In Southern California, a 12-year-old boy admitted to playing with matches, which touched off the buckwheat fire near Santa Clarita. Flames blackened 38,000 acres, destroying 21 homes. Local prosecutors say they may hold the boy's parents liable for damages if further investigation shows they were negligent. The U.S. Supreme Court has issued a stay of execution for a convicted murderer on death row in Mississippi until justices can examine the constitutionality of lethal injection. Grammy-winning entertainer Robert Goulet passed away at a Los Angeles hospital. He was waiting for a lung transplant. He was best known for his Broadway role of Sir Lancelot in Camelot. That was back in the 1960s. Robert Goulet was 73 years old. Funeral services are pending. You are listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a look at science and business news. That's just ahead.
As the world moves to the Internet for marketing, promotion, sales, and communications, it is important to stake out your presence, your business, or yourself in an effective way. The people at Byte Technology know how to define your best self on the web so that people who know you and those who will want to can get a clear picture of who you are and what you have to offer. Byte Technology will design your website so that you will attract new customers and keep your current client base engaged and informed. As McLuhan said, the medium is the message. And never was that more true than in the new internet commerce world. Whatever your business, selling products or services, to the general public or to a niche market, you need a presence that smart people, the people who make the best customers, can find quickly and understand immediately. Byte Technology will custom produce such a site for you. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Tropical storm Noel is back at sea, where it is again strengthening. Noel dumped torrential rain across Cuba and the Bahamas, killing at least 60 people. There's an additional problem with the solar power system at the International Space Station. NASA saying a massive solar wing tore during installation, which could postpone December's space shuttle launch. The World Cancer Research Fund reporting that one of the best ways to avoid cancer is to stay slim. The organization finds that the link between body fat and cancer is closer than had been realized. Drug maker McKesson beating Wall Street expectations by posting an 8% increase in quarterly profit. The company credited strong demand for higher-margin generic pharmaceuticals. House and Senate committees are proposing to make the National Do Not Call Registry permanent. Legislation is pending before the full Senate. Alcatel-Lucent reporting lower revenue and profits have forced the company to cut employee roles by 4,000 workers. The layoffs will be completed by next year. And Goodyear announcing its quarterly profit more than tripled. Nation's largest tire manufacturer has concentrated recently on producing high-end expensive tires. Light sweet crude trading at a record-setting $94.53 a barrel. Gold at $796. That's up $8.20. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 137 points at 13,930. More on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Alrighty, hour two begins a little bit late, but, you know, it's just us. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Halloween edition of Head On. Like I said, okay, we've verged over into some history. Talked a little bit about where hell comes from. All this spooky stuff. I should go to the phones, and I will go to the phones. But while we're on this, the fallout from last night's Democratic debate is quite pissing me off. There's Dennis Kucinich, the only guy talking about, you know, universal single-payer health care, the only guy talking about impeachment, the only guy talking about the end of the war. What does Tim Russert ask him about? You already know. Asks him about the flag staggin' wrestle fracking nassin' neck fracking birth UFOs! And all of a sudden, any substance, because it's a clear attempt to make sure that any substance that Dennis Kucinich is talking about is marginalized. Now, did you know he'd seen a UFO? You know, I heard our dear friend Guy James mention earlier today, and I'd forgotten, and it's so true. Why didn't Russert phrase it, well, Congressman Kucinich, former President Ronald Reagan, who Republicans in this country think is something right next door to Jesus, if not God Almighty himself, said he'd seen a UFO twice. Did you see the same UFO as Ronald Reagan? No, we've got to make Dennis Kucinich, the smartest man in the race, sound like some sort of a loony. Meanwhile, I look over on MSNBC, and what have they got? They got a story there. Oh, here, I got to lean over. It's on the other computer. Headline, Ron Paul's Iowa dreams becoming more real. Rip Van Winkle slept for 20 years and woke to find the world had passed him by. Representative Ron Paul woke up one morning recently to find that perhaps America has caught up with him. Ron Paul, a man who... MSNBC thinks that a guy who wants to destroy Social Security and eliminate every single social safety net in the United States is somehow a forward thinker? Somebody sent me an article saying that scientists have now proven that Neanderthals had red hair. Have they also discovered that their last name was Paul? Destroying Social Security is not forward thinking, it's antediluvian. The world is catching up with him. So Ron Paul's a loony. Dennis Kucinich is talking about stuff that matters, but Dennis Kucinich is the one who gets asked about the damned UFOs. Makes me sick. Sorry, let's go to the phones. Kathy's calling from Florida. Kathy, I'm sorry you had to wait while I did that, but I'm better now.
That's okay, Bob, but I want to ask you first, can you hear me okay?
I hear you just fine.
Oh, great. I'm on the speakerphone.
It would be better if you were on the handheld.
Oh, okay. How's that?
Much, much better.
Okay, Bob. Well, I'm Kathy Bracewell. I'm the coordinator for Code Pink of Volusia Flagler Counties. That's East Central Florida.
Right.
Daytona Beach area.
Mm-hmm.
And we're closely hand-in-hand with Phil Restino here of Central Florida Veterans for Peace.
Right. Phil and I have had a couple of great conversations the last two nights.
That's what he told me. And the reason I'm calling tonight is we were in Orlando on October 27th for the United for Peace and Justice March, a giant demonstration against the occupation of Iraq.
Right.
This is one of 10 or 12 that demonstrations that was held around the country, and this one was for the southeastern United States. Basically, people came from Georgia and Florida, all the way from the Keys to, you know, to Georgia, but it was a gathering of about 3,000 people. And I, you know, everybody's getting kind of mad here about the Democratic debate, but I had kind of a humorous story to tell.
Sure, please.
I was telling Agnes this afternoon, and my friends that were at the march thought it was really hysterical. So I'll just tell the listeners about this. This was unreal. We were there from about 12 noon until the march started, which was about 3 p.m. maybe. And we were, you know, I was at the Code Pink booth. I was right in between the Code Pink booth and the Central Florida Vets for Peace booth. And we were handing out flyers, information, selling T-shirts. We had especially the Code Pink booth had such an attraction for the women that were present at the march. It was fantastic. But we were talking and talking. We were interacting with people all afternoon. And then finally the speakers were speaking and then they wound it up, got ready for the march. And by this time, everybody's really thirsty from all this talking. So I volunteered to go and get drinks for everybody before we started the march. My son and one of the Code Pinkers went with me. We had to wait a long time in Panera Bread for the drinks. But finally we got the drinks and we went back out to hand the drinks over to the people. Everybody had already taken off for the march. So Phil, my son, and my Code Pinker grabbed their drinks and took off. And by this time, well, I don't like to rush anyway, so I just said, okay, you guys, just go, I'll catch up. So I was kind of bringing up the rear. And I was in full Code Pink attire. My shirt, my pink beret that I got in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was all pink. And had my sign, the whole bit. And I was marching. I was bringing up the rear. And I got to the intersection, and I could see all the marchers in the street on the other side when this cop stopped me, this police officer. He was a young guy. Big and burly, and he starts detaining me, bringing all these questions at me. What is Code Pink? Where are you from? Just one question after another, to the point where I was answering. I remained calm and collected. I was answering him. I said, I just want to catch up with my friends. But he just continued to fire questions at me, to the point where I felt like saying, hey, Buster, you know, you weren't even born yet when I was protesting Vietnam.
Right, sure.
But he kept my cool. I didn't say anything. And finally, I said, well, can I go now? I mean, I want to catch up with my friends. So he said, no, you cannot go that way. You'll have to go with those people across the street who are taking a shortcut. And I saw this crowd marching along this other street. So naturally, I went with them. And he said, well, they're taking a shortcut, so it'll be better for you anyway. So I'm marching with these people, talking about how I think Cheney should be impeached first, then Bush, yet they should be tried for war crimes. And I noticed the people were kind of looking at me funny, kind of not wanting to to march with me, or they kind of shied away, or their steps quickened, you know, they're trying to get away from me. And I thought, gee, do I have BO? But then I remembered I had all my perfumes on. That couldn't be. So I just kept talking and marching, and they kept, you know, kind of keeping their distance. And we got up to the intersection where we could see all the demonstrators going past my group, which I found out I was not with my group. Come to find out, when we got to that corner, the group I was with, and by this time it's pouring down rain, I had my code pink umbrella, and I'm offering it to this one young woman. And she goes, oh, no, thank you. She would have preferred to get drenched than to stand under my umbrella. I thought this whole bar.
You were walking with a bunch of wingnuts, weren't you?
I was walking with the gathering of eagles, the very group that everybody was talking about for weeks. Beware of the gathering of eagles.
Oh, these are the people that stomped the guy.
Counter-protesters, counter-demonstrators. They were there to cause us conflict. Here I was marching with them. And I didn't even know it.
Oh, my God.
We got to the corner, and the cops were all standing there, and I that's when the group I was marching with started yelling horrible things to my friends. And I realized what was going on. So I said to the one young cop, hey, that's my group over there. Can I go? And he goes, hurry, go quick. So they yell at me, good riddance. I couldn't believe it. Here I was marching with a gathering of eagles.
You know, these people are so clueless, Kathy. Has anybody ever explained to them that an eagle never picks on anything its own size and prefers to eat the dead?
That's a good one. I don't know if anybody ever told them that, but that's about it.
This is the group. I remember when I was in D.C. a year ago at Camp Democracy. I met a man there, and he was the gentleman who had sort of lost it when he got the news of the death of his son, and burned up the military van.
Right. Phil knows his name. I don't remember his name, but we were up in Washington D.C. in September, and he was there. In fact, I think he was arrested.
Well, the gathering of eagles knocked him down and stomped his guts.
Right. That's exactly. Phil told me about it. I didn't realize that happened.
Yeah, there's video of it. I mean, oh my God, I'm so glad you're safe.
Oh yeah, after I realized what the people I'd been marching with, I thought, man, thank God they didn't try anything. But they really didn't. They didn't say anything to me. All they did was try to get away from me. When I was talking to them, they just
What I wouldn't give for a photograph.
Oh my God. What I wouldn't give myself, because that was, I didn't even realize it was happening till it was all over, and I thought, did that really happen to me? My God.
But, you know, maybe you did some witnessing, Kathy.
Maybe so.
But, you know, and that poor woman, no, I'd rather get drenched than stand under a peace umbrella.
Wasn't that weird?
These people are so twisted. They're
that
so.
Was very, very sick.
Yeah, they are. They are.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, overall, though, how did the march come out?
Well, we had pretty good news coverage with one of our local stations, Channel 13, Central Florida. They usually are very good to us with our protests and demonstrations, and they gave us excellent coverage. The other news stations were not that good, that they barely covered it. And I think one of them even made a mistake in the coverage and gave false information. And all the more reason that we have to be the news. You know, and that's how we feel. That's what we do around here. We hand out flyers. We hand out DVDs. I'm talking to people. I have to be careful at work, but because I'm in the corporate realm.
Mm-hmm.
I still do. I'm careful about it, but I do talk. And out in the community, we're talking to people in the grocery stores and the drug stores. We have to be the news.
Well, we do, and that's, you know, that's why I love to hear from people like you with stories like this, because It is the news. This is a whole lot more the news than whether or not Britney's album's doing okay.
Such a diversion, and people fall for it. All that stupid, you know, garbage that they hand to the general public, and people just latch onto it, and you know, and just remain numb and anesthetized. But I just want to tell you one more thing, Bob, about us being the news. We have our bumper stickers on our cars, and, of course, we have our little cards we hand out all around the community. But I was at Dunkin' Donuts the other day, and I was getting some treats for work, it through the drive-thru when this the cashier said to me, "What is the name? What is the what is that all about? That pink thing on your bumper sticker?" Because the lady behind you was talking in the drive-thru speaker about it. And I told, then I gave her, the cashier, some of my Code Pink cards, and I said, "Well, we're Women for Peace. We stand up for peace and justice, and we're against the occupation of Iraq and any future wars, any war with Iran, definitely. We're going to speak out against it." Well, in the meantime, the lady behind me got out of her car, came up to my window, and asked for my information and said she wanted to join us. Her son had just got back from his third tour of Iraq, and she said, "I've had it." And she said, I have had it. I gave her my card. She goes, "I will email you immediately when I get home." And she did. So I emailed her back, told her about our weekly demonstrations, monthly meetings, and so forth. But that's just one example of how we can be the news. We can communicate with people out in the streets with our bumper stickers.
Well,
it was a cold pink bumper sticker, by the way.
And you know, Kathy, that underscores and highlights what I've been saying all along. The change that's going to come may not come as quickly as we might want it to.
Right.
But it is your presence that assures that come it will.
I agree.
Because that's a person's life who may get changed and whose son's life may be saved from a chance encounter in a drive-thru.
Isn't that something? And that's exactly the way it works.
And so we have to be cognizant of this stuff, and we have to be aware that every, and some of this, forgive me, comes out of my upbringing in the fundamentalist church, there is an opportunity to be a witness for peace in every chance encounter that we have. And I started off the program with that business about that silly little video about telling somebody about Jesus every day. Some of that's kind of twisted because they don't understand in the first place.
Right.
But we do understand the ramifications of this occupation, and we've got a pretty good handle on what's going to happen to the world if we start it up with Iran. And if we do not take every opportunity to tell someone that they have the right as a citizen of this country to stand up and demand actual representation from our elected representatives, and that representation includes a no-holds-barred, no-weasel-room, no-wiggle-room refusal to go to war with a country that has done, that hasn't even crossed another border in 300 years.
Insane. They're just like sitting ducks over there.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable.
So, you know, I so admire what you and all of Code Pink does, because there's more courage there, frankly, than in all the gathering of eagles.
Yeah. Well, we will not give up. And Code Pink is always in the halls of Congress. They're outspoken. You know, they're putting pressure on Congress and the senators, and I'm proud to be a part of it. I just want to mention that in our event on October 27th, last Saturday, a young Iraqi vet spoke, and it would bring tears to your eyes. He had the courage to speak. That's what struck me. He spoke eloquently. I mean, and it was amazing.
Well, the military has to be part of it, too. And so I so admire more and more of these people standing up, folks
right.
like Adam Kokesh and the whole Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans Against the War. Because when they were speaking up, they were standing as a lonely voice crying in the wilderness.
You said it.
And the crowd has come to them, and it has only come to them by virtue of their courage. And that the thing is, that courage has got to begin to extend out of the boots-on-the-ground ranks, and it's got to go upward in the chain of command. And while I respect people like Ricardo Sanchez, who now has his comfortable retirement and can look over his shoulder and say, "You all are a bunch of poopy heads,"
right.
Eventually, it's got to start coming from people who are holding their commissions right now. Because, you know, there's that line in the Declaration of Independence, Kathy, where the signatories say, and to this we pledge, what is it? Our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't wait until they were retired to make that pledge.
Nice and comfy and safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So, you know, that's where we are, I fear.
Well, it's something else, the way this has evolved. Well, we will not give up, Bob. We'll just continue with our commitment here. We need more.
I wish, you know, there are times, Kathy, that I wish I wasn't in such an isolated rural place, because I'm a million miles from anywhere. I hear about things like this, and I would be proud to stand by your side. I would be proud to participate.
With your radio show, you're doing a heck of a lot, you know, to support us and to give us the courage to go on. I mean, really, you're doing that one great job.
Well, thank you. It often feels like not much at all, to be quite honest, and that's not me fishing for compliments. That's just how it feels sitting here behind a microphone while people are out there with their feet on the street.
Well, we all do our part. You know, we each have our part to play here.
Well, what is speaking of parts to play, what's next?
Well, we're continuing demonstrations, and we're planning an event for possibly the end of November, although this time is going fast. We want to plan event. We want to plan movies at our local libraries. We have all these DVDs we can show, and we want to. In that way, we have planned these. We're planning an event at the library either for the end of November or early December for this area, and then at that point, we hand out all our information about Code Pink, looking for new women to join. We now address even the younger. We have some younger girls coming, even some middle school kids coming to the street corners that make their own signs. We have girls of all ages, women of all ages, grandmothers, even, you know, down to middle school age. When we have these events, we hand out information, and we hope that more women will join us. So our next event is probably going to be, like I say, the end of November, early December. It'll be at probably the Daytona Beach City Library, and it'll be a movie that we show. And we'll work on that in conjunction with Central Florida Veterans for Peace.
Well, that's amazing, and it's inspiring.
Keep you posted.
Do. That's the most important part is, you know, make your voice heard outside your own local region. Because that's how we build consensus. And
well, we have connections. Since we go to these events, like this one in Orlando, we've been to Washington, D.C., we've been to New York. We now have connections based, and Code Pink, we have connections all over the country. We have conference calls. We stay in communication with women from all over. So we feel like we're connected. We really do.
And you are. And you are. And yep. when folks on the, this show, other shows like Malloy's, Hartman's can hear about it and spread it out. Then the isolation begins to melt away, and we begin to understand that this is not segregated. This isn't some little protest in the ghetto. That this is in fact nationwide, and it is a building and growing movement.
Exactly, and it's actually global. It is actually global, even in other countries, Europe. Even a branch group in Iraq, of course, believe it or not. So Australia, it's global. So we do not feel alone by any means.
No.
We feel supported.
And the longer you go, the more it will grow. Kathy, thank you very much. And just everything that you do, please know that there are so very, very many people that appreciate it and reverence it and hold it in the highest esteem.
Thank you so much, Bob. And I just want to say one more thing.
Sure.
To you and Agnes, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to y'all, too. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You know, you would think, can you imagine going to a peace march and winding up marching with the freaks from the other side? That's like having Halloween come early. the hell is that?
Bob Kincaid.
Yeah?
How are you?
I was doing better till this happened. Where's this coming from?
We are calling from the pits of the underworld. For some reason, this time of year, the planets align, and we actually get cell phone service down here, so...
Down here?
Yeah. Yes, down here. The fiery pits of the underworld.
The lake of fire that is reserved for the devil and all his angels?
Oh, no. That's just something we made to make the Freepers nuts, and it worked far better than we could have ever anticipated.
So, who are you?
Well, my name is unpronounceable to you mere mortals. You can call me Bob. No, wait, you can't call me Bob because you're Bob, and that would just be confusing. Call me Sam.
Sam?
Sam. They put me on light duty today. I pulled a groin muscle flogging people, and...
I tell you what, I don't care if you're a demon or not. There's nothing worse than a groin pull.
Yeah, it is murder. We're actually thinking of maybe doing it, you know. I've still got to run it past the big man, but we're debating putting that into our normal repertoire. But I just wanted to call and that it's really nice listening to your show, much in the same way that people on your side of the fence call Rush Limbaugh when they feel they've got too many brain cells. We listen to you. Do you remember what it is we're trying to destroy?
I'm a target? Have you got the guest list down there? Am I going to wind up getting sodomized by Jerry Falwell in hell or something?
No, we've actually put him on special duty. He's dealing with VIP personnel, generally people from his side of the fence who are guilty of the sin of hypocrisy. They come down and they get a special visit from him.
You know, I've heard about this room where, I won't give away any of your secrets. But are you doing a pretty brisk business down there these days with all the torment and hell being created by Republicans up here on Earth?
Yeah, actually, it's business. It was really slow there. Throughout the course of just before the Cold War, and then once that picked up, we did pretty good business. After the Cold War fell, it actually started slowing down again, so we had to come up with a new way to stir up trouble over there, and we came up with this brilliant idea. This one dude, and he's actually the guy who taught Karl Rove, he came up with the idea that, you know, if we can just somehow get people going to think they're doing God's work, but they're not doing God's work, they're actually doing our work. We don't know exactly what it is, but people doing the work of evil just aren't as motivated as people who are doing the work of good. We don't know why, that just seems to be the way it is. But we figured out that if we could get people to think they were doing God's work, they would be more motivated than the people who knew they were doing evil's work, and it's just done phenomenally well for us.
Well, Sam, tell me, does your boss? I've never had a chance to ask somebody this before. Is it your boss is doing or the other guy? To put us at odds with each other over who knows God best?
Well, of course it's us. I mean, the guy, the other boss, not my boss, but the one in charge of heaven, you know, actual God, he really doesn't care. I mean, they all have the right idea for the most part, you know. Love each other and all that crap, you know. They all the basic religions, for the most part, have all the basics down pat. So really, the only way we can stir up trouble is to get them fighting each other, and that's really been our plan for the last 2,000 years or so. It's been working fairly well, actually. Don't know what we're going to do once you guys ever actually figure it out. That is, if you don't end up blowing stuff up first. Actually, I was listening to the program earlier, and you were talking about how you've gotten since the Roman era.
So in light of what George Bush has got probably planned for Iran, are you...
George Bush plans it?
Well, okay. How do you get your orders to him, Sam?
Well, believe it or not, and this is actually privileged information, so, you know, I'm hoping nobody's listening in on me right now. Bush is actually... we actually had to launch an internal investigation because he's actually a lesser... I'm a lesser demon. He's a lesser demon, if that makes any sense. But his name is actually Shrub Bush, and we actually had to launch an internal investigation because people among the living were calling him Shrub, and we were like, okay, who leaked? But no, he gets his orders because he talks to us because he's not really a human. He's a lesser devil. So he just, you know, picks it up in the mail just like the rest of us do.
So did he slip out or sneak out, or did he get sent?
He was sent. It was kind of, well, actually, believe it or not, it's kind of both. He kind of slipped out. He was supposed to be doing guard duty over on, like, the 8th Circle or something, and he didn't want to do it, so he slipped out and went
AWOL. Oh, you mean he went AWOL in hell, too?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you guys think he's not reliable on your end. He's about 6 times worse over here. And, the guy the head guy just said, well, he's out, and, let's see if maybe we can turn this to our advantage, and that's kind of what happened.
That's got to be a little bit embarrassing, Sam. I mean, did the head guy just say, well, you know, I mean, stuff happens?
Oh, don't get us wrong. If he doesn't, like, make this work, oh, there's going to be, pardon the pun, hell to pay when he gets back down here.
Any idea when that happens?
Afraid not. You know, to be honest, we can only plan so far. When God, mankind, free will, he kind of screwed everything up in the sense that it's very difficult to plan long term when people have free will and the ability to muck things up. So, you know, we do have a general idea, but you never know what people among the living are going to do that could possibly mess that up. I mean, for all we know, you guys could have elections in the next, the next year you guys are supposed to be having elections in your country?
Yeah,
I mean, if obviously he's not going to be elected, but if we don't get some other influential person in there or somebody whom he can influence, then, you know, all bets are off and we're going to have to reformulate it. So about every half year or so, we have to redo everything and account for...
Well, so do you know, Sam, do you know who the... do you have a guess who that person who can be most easily influenced is? I mean, is it Giuliani? Is it a religiously insane guy like Mike Huckabee or Mitt Romney? Do you guys have a preference down there?
Romney's actually the guy we're banking on. He's the one who's been pushing. He, to our view, is the most decisive person. Divisive person, not decisive, but divisive. If we cared about decisiveness, Bush wouldn't be in there. But no, Mitt Romney, you know, with his whole stem cell research and his abortion thing, you know, he's the most divisive of all the people there. Giuliani isn't reliable enough. I mean, he switches from one side to the other. He can't decide what he's up to. So we couldn't bank on Giuliani, but we think Mitt Romney might be our guy, yeah. So we're doing things subterfuriously, you know, trying to get people to rig machines. You know, we'll figure something out, I'm sure. We got Bush the first in there because Al Gore just would have been too much of... Al Gore would have just thrown everything out the window, and it would have set us back almost 2 centuries if Al Gore had gotten in there, and we couldn't let that happen.
Well, it sounds like evil's a pretty daggum hard job, Sam.
It is. I mean, it is. I mean, I pulled a groin muscle, and, you know, we can't, you know, as much as I hate to admit this, humanity, for the most part, does tend to want to lean towards the good side. We have to go in there and screw with people, you know, bake up ambitions and stuff like that, put ideas in people's head. It is hard work. We got to influence people. We got to rig elections, you know, stir up trouble. We got to, God, do you know how long it took each other. Granted, that's a fire that's going, but boy, was it hard to get it started.
Had to blow on that one a little bit, did you? Well, tell me, Sam, this is a little fantasy that I have. Tell me if I'm right. Is Jerry Falwell down there with the Reverend D. James Kennedy, and are they having to work the all-black lunch counter there at the Walgreens in Hell, and with like Lester Maddox and George Wallace washing dishes?
Oh, of course. I mean, did you honestly think we were going to let them off the hook for that? That was just too easy. You know, there are some things that are just too easy to do to somebody, and you just can't pass on it, and that was one of them.
So, irony is not lost on Hell, then?
No, definitely not. Irony is probably one of the things we have the most fun with down here. You cannot imagine the man's, because, you know, Falwell wasn't a demon. He was a human being that we turned. And you can imagine his surprise when he got down here.
Yeah, looking for the chorus of Angels Singing Hosanna, and he gets AC/DC instead, huh?
Well, actually, we were kind of mean to him. We kind of started with it, you know. We kind of, like, got white paint and painted over all the red and black, you know, in the entry room. And we dressed some of the demons up, which was kind of hard to do. You had to cover the horns and everything. I mean, you guys think your cosmetic surgeons have a problem. Holy crap. But, yeah, we dressed them all up. We dressed everybody all up, and he got down here. And the big man himself dressed up as St. Peter and whatnot. And he came up and, you know, was like, oh, my God, it was like everything I'd ever dreamed of. And
then the rubber mask comes off, like, and surprise!
Yeah. It was funny.
Well, tell me, who gets it worse down there? The hypocrites? I mean, you know, Dante wrote the Inferno and said that the betrayers, and he put Judas in the nethermost depths of hell. Who really gets it worse down there?
Well, it's are not as bad as betrayers. Dante got it about right. Betrayers do get it the worst down here. Hypocrites are about. It kind of depends on the level of hypocrisy. I mean, everybody to a certain extent, it's a human fallacy. Everybody's a hypocrite to a certain extent, so a certain amount of it is forgivable. It's when you get to be a hypocrite and how much damage you cause. Like, for instance, being a hypocrite saying that, you know, I don't like talking on the cell phone while I'm driving or while other people are driving and then doing it yourself. You know, that might get you, according to others, you know, it's on a point system, to tell the truth, and that might get you like 5 points. And if you accumulate a certain number of points, it'll get you like the first or the second circle. But, you know, it's one of those things that depends on the mitigating circumstances or non-mitigating circumstances. So, but yeah, in the terms of Jerry Falwell, when you stir up when you use your hypocrisy to stir up an anti-gay kind of atmosphere, and then, of course, as we all know, you've been sitting there doing the whole thing yourself the whole time, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that gets you a lot of points.
Well, you know, you mentioned that you pulled a groin on a flog. You must have been leaning into it pretty hard. Who were you going after, Sam?
Honestly, I don't know his name. Sometimes we don't get the name. Sometimes we're just told, you know, do this one. I think he was somebody. It's nobody you know. It was somebody from one of our long-term customers who's been here since before Christ was dropped down on the planet. So,
one of your nastier conquerors, slaughterers of women and children types.
Yeah. We're talking like prehistory type people.
And you're still laying into him hard enough that you pulled a groin?
Well, hell is eternal. Somebody's
So what does that say for your what does that say for your groin pull? I mean, you're dealing with eternity here. I mean, I've had a couple of those and they felt like they were eternal.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the amount of pain does not determine eternity, or some people would be out of hell early. But no, it'll be fine in a week or so, and I get back to it. It's just they got me on light duty right now, so I'm just sitting here. What do they have me doing? I think I have to sort the next list of incoming or something.
Big list?
Not as big as we'd like, but we're working on it.
Well, that kind of scares me, Sam. I mean, I've never had a conversation with a demon before, but up here, you know, we're looking, and it looks like that little lesser demon that got loose and got into the White House is literally hell-bent. I guess that's a big joke where you are. Hell-bent on unleashing death and destruction on Iran. Are you expanding the joint? I mean, are you looking? But then again, you know, the people that we bomb in Iran, they're going to be innocents, aren't they? So you're not going to get to touch them, are you?
Well, it depends. I mean, first of all, the shrub is going a little bit on his own end, and that's something the big guy is going to have to talk to him about at some point. You know, obviously, we don't want to destroy the world, because if we destroy the world, that's it, game over for everybody. That pretty much just cogs down all the machines. You know, we don't want to start World War III. That's not good for anybody. So what the heck little Georgie boy's got going over there? We're not entirely sure yet. Unfortunately, that's part of the thing about being evil, you know, is that it's hard to keep track of your own people. Sometimes they tend to get cockeyed and run off and try to do their own little thing. Every so often, Satan has to whip them in line. Oh, I said his name. Shoot, that's going to get me like 30 flogs.
Oh man, do you need to get off the phone now? I mean, are they going to? I mean, when you mentioned his name, is it like Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice? Are they going to tune in?
Well, I only did it once, but yeah, they're going to miss me in the pit here before too much longer. I've got a report due, so maybe I better let you go.
Okay, I don't really have anything I can hang up on you with here, but you know, I'm a little uneasy about this, Sam. I'm glad you called and stuff. I don't know why you picked me and not, you know, somebody like Flush Flimball. Seems like you'd have a little more in common with him.
Yeah, but he's too easy.
I mean, O'Reilly, Hannity, Savage, Michael Savage. I mean, tell me, okay, just quick. Dish, Sam, Dish, real quick. Savage, he's another one. You're not watching the gates as closely as you should be. He got loose too, didn't he?
No, Savage isn't one of them. There are a couple of them. Well, actually, there's one, and it's a man, but he's down there, and I don't know if he just doesn't understand or what, but he's running around there like a chick, and she, whatever you want to call it.
No, no.
Yeah.
No. And I guess you don't get to say my hand to God, it's true, but Ann Coulter?
I can't say the name, obviously, but you all know who it is, I'm sure. It's a baby.
Oh, man. Oh, my.
Something else evil we put out.
And just got...
It's not all death and destruction. We were responsible for, you know, Austin Powers.
Are you responsible for Britney Spears? Are you responsible for Lindsay Lohan and Paris Hilton? I mean, are you responsible for...
No.
Did you guys do the mainstream media? Is that how we got screwed up here?
No, that's just an unbelievable help. On the other hand, you know, there's different divisions that maybe the mass communications divisions work. I really don't know. It's like, you know, this call, you know, it helps that it's this time of year, but, you know, we had to have the IT guy. I had to bribe one of the IT guys, you know, get the cell phone working and, you know, get it off the radar and whatnot. But,
So, I mean,
yeah.
If the eternal planes rub up close again, I mean, is this going? I mean, am I going to hear from you again? I mean, is there? How do I contact you? Do I want to contact you? I'm a little unnerved with this.
Oh, for crying out loud, Bob! We're all friends around here. I mean, when you all get down to it, it's
don't tell me get down, Sam. I'm not look. I mean, this is all terribly edifying and everything, but dude, I don't want to hang with you. And, you know, I know what you mean by hang.
Well, you don't have anything to worry about because, you know, you're not on our side fighting against us. So you're pretty much safe, unfortunately. Because, you know, we could hang, but, you know, we won't.
Well, I guess I feel better about that. I mean, somewhere the whole compassion rubbed off on me. I mean, I'm sorry you're banged up, man. Demon, whatever. I mean, I hope that you get to feeling better fairly soon. I've never talked with a demon before. I mean, is there a protocol?
Not for a lesser demon there isn't. I mean, it's not like I'm Vlad the Impaler or something. I mean, you got to get the protocol strict with him, or he impales you right through the hindquarters. You know.
And Shrub turns out to be his cousin, but he's not his cousin. He's really him, isn't he? I mean, it's just us, Sam.
No. Vlad works over in Sector 7G. He's one of our morons over in Sector 7G. But whether they're related or not, you know, after a couple centuries, it's hard to tell. We don't exactly keep records as well as we should. Well, we do, but you know, the technology really didn't advance till recently, where we were able to quit using paper records. And look, it's hell. The paper burns. You know, over time, the records just kind of up in smoke.
Yeah, and you're probably not printing on asbestos or anything. Okay, one last question before you get busted, Sam.
Sure.
Bill Gates, one of yours?
Nah. Bill Gates is one of those odd individuals who has done as much to help your kind as he's done to hurt your kind. Obviously, he started Microsoft, which has turned out to be a major capitalistic force that we've been able to hijack and use to our ends from time to time. But he's also done a great amount of good in terms of his charity organizations and his ability to advance your technology. Something else that we've taken, you know, I was mentioning the records earlier. We're all computerized down here using Vista, which I assure you is a hellish operating system.
No kidding. Even the boss has to use Vista now?
Yeah, well, of course he uses Vista. That's not...
I imagine you must have one heck of a firewall. Sorry, that was just too easy, Sam.
Yeah, it was. But you think that's bad. The people, the entry-level people in the IT department, you know, we're talking like people who cooked books for Enron and whatnot.
Yeah.
They still have to use Windows 98.
Oh, my God. You really, really do know how to punish a soul, don't you? You know, I got to figure...
Yeah.
I gotta figure you're having just a hell of a good time with Ken Lay down there, being how he was so close to Shrub and everything.
You know, it's funny. He's in solitary right now. He got down here and he tried to hijack the place.
Well, he'd be the guy to do it.
Well, how did you think the Democrats got elected? We were a little busy down here.
Putting down a coup led by Ken Lay. Well, bless my soul. Oh, probably shouldn't have said that.
It's already blessed. But tell you what...
You sound like you're unhappy about that.
Well, I mean, anytime... You know, we get a commission, and anytime, you know, we lose a soul, somebody down here loses part of their, you know, Christmas bonus or something. I don't know what we get for a Christmas bonus, because I've never gotten one, but that's what I hear anyway.
You know, I think you need to organize, Sam. It sounds like you're far enough down on the totem pole that you're not getting... the boss isn't giving you your due, let alone giving him his. I mean, you got a work-related injury, and you're still on the job. I mean, what happened to temporary total disability? You need to organize, Sam. You need to organize. And by the way, I'm being asked in the chat room. I'm sure you're familiar with the chat room. They're all just anxious to know what you've got Ronald Reagan doing, or what you're doing to Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan, he works in the Special Projects Department. Last I heard, it's kind of like the black eye. All right, already bringing the dinner bell.
Oh,
I'll be there in a minute. He works in the Special Projects Department, basically blacks. Unfortunately, I'm so low on the totem pole, I don't know exactly what they're working on over there. It's some sort of world domination thing. I'm sure he's probably, helping Reagan is doing is anybody's guess.
But he is there. I mean, everybody, all the Republicans up here think he's some sort of saint and he's got his own harp up in heaven. He's in hell, right, Sam?
Well, yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry. Don't well yeah me, Sam. I mean, it's not like I didn't call you, I don't think. I mean, I don't know what's going on down there. I have to ask the questions. It's, you know, it's kind of like journalism. Nobody's doing it anymore. Maybe you don't recognize it.
That's probably true. But, I just kind of figured you guys knew that already.
Well, I guessed at it. I mean, you know, some of them are easy, but you like to have a little verification. I'm still a little shaken knowing that, you know, dude looks like a lady is actually an operative. I mean, that's messing with me hard. I probably shouldn't say hard.
Dude looks like a lady.
Yeah.
See, we couldn't destroy you guys completely. You make too much great music.
Well, Aerosmith is great music. Dude, you don't get out much, do you? Sam? Sam?
Lesser demon.
I think your cell's breaking up, Sam.
As you can imagine.
Sam, I think they're hearing you. I'm only getting like every fourth word.
Yeah, they must be on to me. Tell you what, Bob, I'm gonna go. Next time the planets align, I'll give you a call and give you an update.
Do that, please. We this doesn't just happen every day. Sam. We lost him. I think he's already lost. It's the damnedest. It's the strangest thing I've ever experienced. I'm sitting here. I'm babbling on, talking anti-war stuff. And all of a sudden, I mean, I've never done pictures of the studio. The studio's, you know, not something that, you know, it's radio. But, you know, the phones are quiet. The pots are potted down. And boom! You heard it. I'm a little unsettled. Well, yeah, I can sympathize with that. I don't know quite what to make of all this. This is just, it's a little too much for my tiny mind to comprehend. We'll be back after the news. I'm going to sort of gather my wits. You're listening to a very special Halloween edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid. Prayer meeting, even. We'll be back. You want to chime in? I'm right here, I hope, I think, on the horn.
This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill, the Senate Judiciary Committee votes early next week on the White House nominee for Attorney General Michael Mukasey. Congressional Democrats say they're waiting to hear Mukasey's legal opinion on a form of torture known as waterboarding. So far, they say he has not provided his clear stance on the issue. Many Democrats say they will not vote for him unless he fully answers the question. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Defense Secretary Robert Gates announcing that all State Department convoys in Iraq will now be under U.S. military control. It is the latest step taken as part of an investigation into the shooting deaths of 17 Iraqi civilians involving Blackwater USA. President Bush says he'll again veto legislation expanding the federal children's health insurance program if the bill contains an increase in tobacco tax. Congress proposes paying for the $35 billion increase with tobacco taxes, including an extra 61 cents on each pack of cigarettes. The Federal Reserve met today, deciding to cut the key interest rate by 0.25 percentage point. Key rate now at 4.5%. That's down from the previous 4.75% rate. Democratic presidential frontrunner Hillary Clinton took some heat from her rivals during last night's televised debate held in Philadelphia. Senator Barack Obama and former Senator John Edwards both challenged Clinton's consistency and candor, especially on the question of driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. In Southern California, a 12-year-old boy admitted to playing with matches, which touched off the buckwheat fire near Santa Clarita. Flames blackened 38,000 acres, destroying 21 homes. Local prosecutors say they may hold the boy's parents liable for damages if further investigation shows they were negligent. The U.S. Supreme Court has issued a stay of execution for a convicted murderer on death row in Mississippi until justices can examine the constitutionality of lethal injection. Grammy-winning entertainer Robert Goulet passed away at a Los Angeles hospital. He was waiting for a lung transplant. He was best known for his Broadway role of Sir Lancelot in Camelot that was back in the 1960s. Robert Goulet was 73 years old. Funeral services are pending. You are listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a look at science and business news. That's just ahead.
As the world moves to the Internet for marketing, promotion, sales, and communications, it is important to stake out your presence, your business, or yourself in an effective way. The people at Byte Technology know how to define your best self on the web so that people who know you and those who will want to can get a clear picture of who you are and what you have to offer. Byte Technology will design your website so that you will attract new customers and keep your current client base engaged and informed. As McLuhan said, the medium is the message. And never was that more true than in the new Internet commerce world. Whatever your business, selling products or services, to the general public or to a niche market, you need a presence that smart people, the people who make the best customers, can find quickly and understand immediately. Byte Technology will custom produce such a site for you. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Tropical storm Noel is back at sea, where it is again strengthening. Noel dumped torrential rain across Cuba and the Bahamas, killing at least 60 people. There's an additional problem with the solar power system at the International Space Station. NASA saying a massive solar wing tore during installation, which could postpone December's space shuttle launch. The World Cancer Research Fund reporting that one of the best ways to avoid cancer is to stay slim. The organization finds that the link between body fat and cancer is closer than had been realized. Drug maker McKesson beating Wall Street expectations by posting an 8% increase in quarterly profit. The company credited strong demand for higher-margin generic pharmaceuticals. House and Senate committees are proposing to make the national Do Not Call registry permanent. Legislation is pending before the full Senate. Alcatel-Lucent reporting lower revenue and profits have forced the company to cut employee roles by 4,000 workers. The layoffs will be completed by next year. And Goodyear announcing its quarterly profit more than tripled. Nation's largest tire manufacturer has concentrated recently on producing high-end expensive tires. Light sweet crude trading at a record-setting $94.53 a barrel. Gold at $796. That's up $8.20. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 137 points at 13,930. More on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
You know, I don't think I'll ever say this show's really going to hell again. Not even if it's one of those shows where I want to sit in the corner and suck my thumb after it's over. Uh-uh. No. I'm a little spooked. See, that's what I get for playing that stupid little fundamentalist video with the video on it. Yeah, dancing about architecture. That's what I get for playing the audio from that stupid little fundamentalist video at the beginning of the show. I got to be careful what I'm doing here. I may be messing with... There's something going on here, and I may be messing with forces... Well, you know what it says in Shakespeare. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophies. Wow. But, you know, you can tell it's a... Even when the phone call comes from the eternal pits of hell itself, it's still some working guy. So that means, I think, that we're on the right track. Sitting there having to flog dudes in hell with a bad groin pull. If you've ever had one, you know. You don't think they're ever going to get better. And, you know, last night I talked about the fact that we worry about people when we don't hear from them for a while. Well, lo and behold, I mentioned somebody specifically, I think, and there he is. It's our pop culture correspondent, David, calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you too, Bob. Yeah, I believe I went off the radar last year too. It's a seasonal thing, I believe.
Yeah, you did. You did.
Yeah, I mean, I did that last October too. I think it's just, you know, it's a cycle thing. A lot of people, I think, do it.
Yeah.
And you just immerse yourself into something else or whatever. And there really wasn't anything I really felt like really saying or whatever. So.
Anything that was really lighting you up?
No, I mean, I really wasn't listening to it, the show, that much. I mean, it was kind of funny because the times that I listened to was the one time that I wanted to catch Scott Ritter, which, I mean, to tell you the truth, I didn't really, I'll be honest with you, I didn't turn the show on that many times during the whole month, but I caught the Scott Ritter interview, and I caught what someone was saying, where was David yesterday, so I decided to call in.
Well, you know, we just want to make sure that nobody's coming, gotcha, or you haven't fallen off one of those rocky cliffs or anything, you know.
I just got done watching probably the best documentary of the year.
Yeah?
Which is Running Down a Dream, Tom Petty's documentary.
Running Down a Dream? Oh, wow, cool.
All 4 hours of it. Yes, it is 4 hours, people. Peter Bogdanovich directs it. It's a really interesting take on the Heartbreakers, full access kind of thing, and... I really recommend it. I'm really kind of shocked that Best Buy is selling it, which is only Best Buy.
Only? They've got a monopoly?
Only Best Buy. And that doesn't sound like Tom Petty when you put that to Last DJ. So I'm thinking maybe his management got to him or something.
Yeah, well, or the distribution company.
Or something like that. But what was really interesting was the fact that nobody even mentioned, and I just read an article and someone is pissed off about it, that Tom Petty, that Sundance... decided to show the whole thing. Nobody really advertised about it, and they showed it the whole movie October 29th. So if anyone who had the Sundance Channel out there, well, there's a few people, you probably didn't know they aired it Monday.
No. Well, no.
But these aren't coincidences, people. I mean, they do this for a reason. They want you to go to Best Buy and, you know, chip in and buy it.
Well, I mean,
I'm not gonna whore for Best Buy, but it is three DVDs and one CD for $30, free shipping. So it's the only place you can get it. So,
and you know, I'm
trying to get a gift. I got it for my dad for his birthday. So, you know.
Your dad dug it.
Yeah, he loves Tom Petty.
Wow, cool. I'm getting old.
My dad likes Led Zeppelin. He even likes Tupac.
That kind of explains you, David, in a way. I mean, yeah. I'm not being mean by that. I mean, you've been raised by some cool people.
The interesting thing about it is he got into a lot of the music that I was listening to just through, you know, osmosis kind of thing. Like, you like so and so. Like, I'm a real big time Buckethead fan, and I got him into the guitarist Buckethead, and then, you know, I got him into Joe Satriani. I said, you got to listen to this guy. I love
Oh, wow, Surfing with the Alien.
Yeah, I mean, just his whole attitude and everything. But that's not what I called about. I also wanted to mention, wow, I'm going to be here for a little bit. I also wanted to mention Into the Wild, Sean Penn. Oh, man, that's great.
Okay, you broke up a little bit. Sean Penn, Into the Wild?
Yeah, Sean Penn, Into the Wild, the story about Paul McCandless goes to Alaska.
Yeah.
There's a pivotal scene in it. I think it says a lot about where we're headed as a country, and it was an image that still burns in my mind. Paul McCandless is one of the guys who actually took his money. It's not a joke. This is what he did. He took his money, he took his Social Security card, and he just burned it and just went right into the middle of the wilderness of Alaska. And it's a really interesting movie because after college they keep talking to him, you got to get into a career and all of this, and he didn't want to get a career. He took back, his parents tried to get him a new car. He didn't want the new car. And like I said, I think Sean Penn does a great job with it. But not only that, Sean Penn's a smart guy because...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you know who does the soundtrack to it, but that's an impressive lot of songs, too. Eddie Vedder does the whole soundtrack to it.
No kidding.
And it's a really, really... it's a really, really interesting kind of quiet, kind of insular look into what happens when you have no money and you're going to Alaska and you have to learn how to hunt for food. Yeah, and it's not a happy ending, by the way, so I'm not going to spoil it, but I think...
No, I'm aware of the book, so I know, yeah, it's not a happy ending.
And then there was another movie that everyone's talking about, but it's 8-hour people, but I think we should mention it, especially since it's Halloween. Why not? Which, by the way, before I get into that, it doesn't take a genius to do crossover marketing, but, you know, that was really brilliant, releasing Rob Zombie's Halloween in August. That's good cross-marketing, guys. But anyways.
Very well said, yeah.
I know. So this movie that I'm talking about is a movie by a character actor, extra named, or something like that. I'm not familiar what movies he's in, but his name's William Orr. He did a movie called Blood Car that people are talking about. Cost about $15,000 to make, and what the movie is about is this guy is a vegan. Who realizes his soy powered or vegetable powered engine isn't going to work, and he slips, and he actually has blood seep into the engine. So he realizes human blood is what fuels. And of course, this is a metaphor for something of the times we live in. Human blood seeps into the engine, and there's this great, great dark scene. I kid you not, where there's this war veteran. Oh my God, the acting is so good, just on an amateur level. But the dialogue is so. I mean, I guess what inspired it is he said he was watching a horror movie the day, and he's like, I can do that, and I can do that 10 times as better. And then his friends were like, Well, why don't we do it? So they ended up making...
Yeah, see, that's where the trouble always starts. I could do that. Dare you. Dare you. Triple dog dare you. Jump right past the double dog, yeah.
Yeah. So there's this scene where he realizes he has to start, killing people to fuel his car because I think the year is 2012, and gas is at $36.21 a gallon. And... there's a scene where this war veteran and he coys this war veteran from I think Vietnam or something to go into his trunk, and he's like, "Would you like to get a dinner, sir? Would you like to get a dinner?" And he says one of the sickest lines. He takes him and he puts him in the back of the trunk, and there's like blades in the back of the trunk, and he's like, "Serve your country again."
Jesus.
I know. When people see, I mean, I got to tell you, a few Red Staters who saw that movie, they would get a little unnerved at that because that's a little bit too much truth for them.
Well, and of course, yeah. Irony's lost on them.
Yeah, Blood Car to me is a really interesting, and it's amazing they did it for $15,000. I'll have to send it to your way and let you see it so you can see the what I got out of it. And what else? I was gonna say something briefly about the whole. One of the conversations I caught with was Phil, and he was talking about 9/11 truth, and wow, I just want to touch on that a little bit.
Touch gently.
Yeah, touch gently, or we're gonna have a firestorm. But it's good for ratings. Good for ratings.
Well, you know, I'll be the first one to say that I don't know what happened. I mean, I know three planes flew into three buildings.
I know.
I know that one plane was shot down with air-to-air missiles over western Pennsylvania.
I know.
That much I know.
I just want to explain this to Phil, why so many people and progressives don't get on the bandwagon of 9/11. I think I speak for a lot of people, and I'll explain it to you. There's no physical evidence, Phil. And as much as I want to say whoever did it is in my mind at the moment, I realize it'll always come back to me. And one day when I'm not having it, one day when there's a crime connecting me to something or connecting me to an incident, I'm going to be in the same boat, not like a 9/11 or anything like that or any kind of catastrophe like that. But if there is ever a moment, I don't want people to go on circumstantial evidence. I want there to actually be physical. And I know that pains for a lot of people to hear that. But there is no physical evidence. I can't do anything with it. They melted it all down. I can't look at a video camcorder shot.
And God knows that alone is enough to fuel one's speculation.
And look what they did. I mean, this is a psychosis going on now, Bob. And I hope you don't get offended by this, Bill, but it is a psychosis because they went into Bill Maher's place, which I have no problem with that. And they didn't address it properly. They went in there. They went shouting. They said 9/11 inside job, 9/11 inside job. I don't know if you saw the footage. He goes out in the audience and he says, "I will kick your ass," because he's mad because they won't shut up. It's live TV. So I understand from his standpoint, and I understand where the 9/11 truth people come from. But the bottom line is,
well, look, I mean, the best example I can come up with for that,
yeah,
David, is what used to happen in the bad old days when I was on terrestrial radio over in Beckley, and some right-wing gooberhead would call in. And I would do my best to engage in sane, civil conversation. But anytime you're talking to one of these, like a right-winger, somebody whose agenda is to keep you from speaking.
Right.
Eventually they start screaming and shouting, and you just have to push the button and make them go away. And you know what? It pisses you off. I mean, if you are putting the effort into creating the program, the show, whatever, and somebody comes in with no respect whatsoever and starts trying to scream down your hard work, you're damn right. You know, I mean, there are a couple of times if I could have reached through the microphone and strangled some little right-wing SOB, I would have.
And you know, going on the theme of that and what those people were saying, I'm trying to address to the point that everything that the 9/11 truth people, and I've watched some of their videos, they don't even realize how much time they're getting in the mainstream news. They don't even realize how much time they're getting, and they still continue and say, "We're not being covered." Well, look around. I mean, of all the issues being covered, you're at the halfway mark of visibility of more than anything that I can think of in terms of crucial issues in our time.
But the thing is, it's sort of an all or nothing approach, David. Because
I know.
It's not enough for somebody like me to say I don't know what happened. I'm not on board with you know, everything you say. I'm not satisfied with what the so-called 9/11 commission put in, because that was a dummied up commission. It was destined to fail from the start. Anytime that George Bush comes in to talk to him, and he can only come in and sit on sit on Dick Cheney's lap to talk, and I don't even want to think about where Dick Cheney's hand was in the puppet. I can say all of that. I can say that the so-called investigation was inherently flawed because while we can take microscopic pieces of an airplane and put an airplane back together in a hangar, we didn't have enough regard for the thousands dead at the World Trade Center complex to put the evidence in a secure location and let the forensics people do what forensics people do. I can say that. I can say there certainly appear to be questions about the passenger manifest on the aircraft. I can say that.
Yeah.
I can say all of that, but because I will not say that I know, because of all the things I don't know, that George W. Bush put on a little black hat and little black boots and a little black coat and ran all over the World Trade Center planting little black bombs, if I won't say exactly and precisely that, then, you know, well, I'm just off in the wilderness. And I call BS on that, David.
I know, and I saw another video that really kind of made me point, and I hope... I bet you Phil has seen it. And Phil, if you've seen it, this is another example of why people are distancing away from 9/11. It has nothing to do with what we think of. It has to do with the tactic and the attitude and the tone. If you don't have the attitude and tone, you're lost. By the way, on O'Reilly, guess who got blitzed by her 9/11 association? The O'Donnell. So again, I mean, sticking up. For what? There's no evidence. There's none. Why do we keep...
Boatload of speculation, and what's more, and this is the part that pisses me off the most, David.
Yeah.
You know, I've told... you know, we live and breathe by listener contributions on this network, and one of the first things I said when I announced that we would accept contributions and that that's how we were going to keep this going was that I was uncomfortable with it because... you know, I grew up watching things like PTL and Oral Roberts and all these people, all these hucksters, all these phonies with their hand out. There are people who have made tiny fortunes for themselves off of the blood and death and bones of the dead from the World Trade Center and from the Pentagon. And they've done it selling speculation, okay? It has become an industry, and it's an industry for which I have about as much regard as I have the evangelism industry, because it has at its core the same damn motive, and that is making a fast buck off some people who are in pain and seeking an answer.
You know, Bob, I saw another video, and this is yet another reason why I hope a lot of people listening to understand why I don't jump on. They went to the Bill Clinton bookstore, and I'm not making this up. You can watch the video for yourself. They went to the Bill Clinton book signing. I'm not a fan of Bill Clinton, so let's get that out of the way. They planted a hidden speaker, and while he was signing books, they just ranted for 15 minutes saying, Bill Clinton is New World Order scum. He's New World Order scum. And then they said, he helped cause 9/11. He helped cause 9/11. And I'm like, is this the level?
And then what?
Activism you're going to? Because I'm not going on board with you.
No, I want to stop the damn war. I want to end the occupation. I want to prevent the next war. I'd like to see an impeachment.
Yeah.
And I have a constitutional and factual basis for everything I've just said that I want.
You know, the truth is, if we did cover more. This is the sad truth. If we did have, and now that I think of it, I'm kind of glad you don't. But if we did have more 9/11 investigators, 9/11 this, 9/11 that, as soon as you just started turning the opposite way, doing a turn out of that alley, they would call you New World Order scum. They would call anyone associated with anything. Well, I don't know.
And that's because there's an element. You know, these disparate elements out of this so-called movement all have different versions, and they're all looking for an orthodoxy, but they're all in charge of what the orthodoxy is going to be. I mean, this is prayer meeting, so this is the time to talk about orthodoxy. And nobody, there's no nuance, and nobody can, you know, if this is your theory, nobody can disagree with a single element of it. I know somebody out there that is working right now and has done some hard work and has utterly discredited a couple of the darlings of the truth movement, a couple of the so-called key players who provide the, you know, oh my God to it.
Right.
And he's taken it apart like taking apart a spider web. And, you know, but again, you know, I can sit here and tell you that a cracker doesn't turn into meat in your belly, but millions of people the world over continue, despite the relevant scientific evidence that it doesn't happen, they continue to believe it. And this is the same thing, belief and not knowledge.
The tagline, Investigate 9/11, that has now changed to, I notice it now, 9/11 is an inside job. And I see rational people saying it. And, you know, I think to myself, if you don't have any physical evidence, where is this going to take you? What good is it going to do? This is pointless.
I know.
And to me, I mean, people just need to realize. And then the other thing I was going to mention was, did you talk about the Glenn Greenwald thing at all?
No, I didn't. And I got another person on the line. Let's save that for another night, if you don't mind, David, because there's a couple things I want to get.
Bob.
We fret. I'm so glad we heard from you, man.
All right, man. I'll call later.
Now we know you were just holed up watching a Tom Petty video. Okay, I mean.
Oh yeah, that's it. I was holed up getting the director's cut. Yeah.
Damn straight. Later, David. Take it easy.
All right, later.
Bye now. And here in a little bit, we'll jump into our evening's Halloween official reading. Right now, we've got our good friend Luke calling from near Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, how's it going?
Fine, Bob. Can I add my one little problem with 9/11? I still want somebody to explain to me.
Sure.
I still want them to explain to me why all those tapes they pulled from all the ATMs and the mini marts and everything around the Pentagon have never been released, if they show nothing.
Yeah, well, you know, one of them was released, and I mean, one of those security cam things was released, but that wasn't sufficient.
I mean, it was a silver blur. It's like, okay, fine, you've got 30 other tapes. Even if they show nothing, I want to see nothing. Show me the tape with the time, date, code, and of course, by now they could have.
And you know, I do. I want to see it all. I want everything put out there for public consumption. If the 9/11 truth movement makes something out of it that it isn't, or I do, or anybody, let us make our own decisions. Let us come to our own conclusions. You know, we're big boys and big girls, and we're capable of doing that.
Okay, let's go on to the content.
Next,
to the new stuff. Well, that's the point. Now, my question is, how long do you figure it's going to take them to sanitize all the records so Condi can walk out and say she didn't know anything about them giving immunity to Blackwater?
Oh, Lord. there's the $64,000 question. Karen, you don't get much closer to the Bush cabal than Karen Hughes, and, you know, she announced today that she needs to spend more time with her family. I wouldn't be surprised to see Condi, step down and move to that lovely little estate in Paraguay sometime soon.
Down to the new was it, would it be Bushitania?
Well, you know, Kenny Bunkport South.
Yeah.
Kenny Bunkport on the Pampas.
Yeah, the only problem is, you know, who's going to be in total charge is going to be Mother.
Oh, God.
The evil queen.
You know, that there's never been a better likeness of her than on the Quaker Oats box. And that portrait of her on the $1 bill is just precious.
Okay, let's get into some other stuff, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, my question is, here, I was thinking of it, this whole thing with the FEMA fake news conference, the one I had to love was it Dana Perino coming out saying, we would never condone anything about that, and I'm sitting there going, okay, let's see. Now, I can think of the names Jeff Gannon, the name Karen Ryan, the name Armstrong Williams, and I don't know any particular ones. I remember they had
but we'd never make up that
got paid to do good news.
We'd never make up the news. That's, you know, that's too serious. We'd never make up the news.
But the thing gets to me is, other than Oberman or maybe John Stewart, they make statements like that, and no one's sitting there reading this list. You know, explain to me about the, you know, our favorite one still is Jeff Gannon. I still want Tim Russ to explain to me why no one to this day at NBC News has asked what he was doing there all that, well, about 112 times that
yeah.
he was there when they weren't having press conferences.
Yep.
You know, I want some questions like that asked, you know, but...
No. I'm sorry. Luke, you know, you're out of hand at this point because... you know better. You know that Tim Russert is going to get to the bottom of the important questions of state facing this nation, such as Congressman Kucinich, did you see a UFO?
Well, the thing I love about him is
like Reagan.
The thing I love about Tim Russert is I don't do gotcha. then 5 minutes later, there he is asking a gotcha question.
Yeah, and Dan, dancing.
I really would like somebody to put some tape of Tim Russert up sometime, go in to meet the press, and when he starts talking, say, run this tape, you know, and have Tim Russert asking some of his stupid questions, like a little montage of them. Go.
Well, you know the graphic that Bart Cop puts up every time he puts it up there, right?
Which one?
He's got a little animated graphic of Tim Russert with clown hair and a clown hat.
And
it animates, and all it says is Clinton's cock, Clinton's cock, Clinton's cock, Clinton's cock.
Well, you know now the problem is, though, he has a challenger. I tell you, I really believe the person now who's taking over the first person in that is Chris Matthews.
Yeah.
Every time you listen to him talk, that's all he's talking about is the Clinton's life, his and Hillary's. And you're just sitting there going, get off of it. If you want to talk about adultery, fine, let's talk about Rudy Giuliani.
You know, I just had a horrifying thought today right before going on the air, Luke, and that was if by some sick, tragic thing we were to get stuck with a Republican Congress again when Senator Clinton, Senator Clinton in the White House, do you realize that they would impeach her for condoning Bill?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
we'd have to listen to some right-wing freak like Dan Burton stand up and say, the President of the United States has condoned sexual immorality. The flag is in the dirt. Someone must pick up the flag. Law and order. Law and order. God bless America. Somebody say the pledge, for heaven's sakes.
You know, sometimes with Dan Burton, you just feel like, it's like, somebody get a steak.
Yep.
But it don't stop the undead. You know how that is.
Yeah, it's Halloween, you know.
It's one of those
things. Oh, by the way, did you catch the David Letterman line about Dick Cheney going hunting?
Oh, I saw it.
That Dick Cheney, he's a real sportsman. Before he shoots the bird, he makes them dig their own grave.
Ooh. Isn't that what he did in the top 10 on last night?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, Lordy B. It's like I say, I still want to know where the Swiss Miss is. I'm curious.
Yeah, I bet she was there with the little dirndl on.
I don't know where she is this time?
Yeah.
So I say, anybody call over?
Did you catch the thing that he was followed? Get this, and I'm not making this up. Okay, this is not shtick. This isn't a joke. Dick Cheney goes bird hunting and is followed by an ambulance.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, but that's one little secret that they've kept hidden for the last 6 years. Is anywhere he goes, he has a MASH unit following him. I mean, they're ready almost to do open heart surgery on him at a moment's notice.
Well, one can only hope that Trapper John and Hawkeye are just liquored up out of their minds there.
Well, it's
for his heart.
I'm thinking the
ambulance, when he goes hunting, the ambulance is there for whoever he shoots.
Well, see, that was the thing that got to me. As I remember, you know, when he shot his, as somebody said, I didn't know lawyers were in season again.
Try the wheel.
But it was amazing to me that the man got shot. I figured they had the hospital set up right there at the thing and already had the pellets out of him. I'm surprised they had to take him to a hospital.
No kidding.
I'm surprised we ever knew about it.
What do you want to bet he went in that ambulance? I mean, that's what I started thinking about when I read that. You know, I bet you. I just bet you.
Well, see, the thing that surprised me, I'm still surprised they didn't whisk him off to the local, whatever the local army base was, and treated him. We probably would never have seen him.
Nope.
But you got to wonder if Dick was petrified at that time. A little liquid lightning.
Pickled. In the hunting camps I've been in, that's called a pork chop in a bottle.
Yeah. Yeah, let's go out and shoot some. Come on, yeah.
Hey, Luke, I got to roll on, brother, but thanks a lot.
Have a good evening and happy Halloween.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. All right, I promised you a little reading. Yeah, because you can't do it for yourself. Oh, my God. Oh, what kind of ego do I have? Last year, I did Mark Twain's The Invalid's Tale. And instead of doing the traditional Poe or something, you know, Mark Twain dabbled in this kind of stuff, too. And I prefer Mark Twain, because at least you get a giggle out of it somewhere along the way. This year's selection is Cannibalism in the Cars. Mark Twain. I visited St. Louis lately, and on my way west, after changing cars at Terre Haute, Indiana, a mild, benevolent-looking gentleman of about 45 or maybe 50 came in at one of the way stations and sat down beside me. We talked together pleasantly on various subjects for an hour, perhaps, and I found him exceedingly intelligent and entertaining. When he learned that I was from Washington, he immediately began to ask questions about various public men and about congressional affairs, and I saw very shortly that I was conversing with a man who was perfectly familiar with the ins and outs of political life at the Capitol, even to the ways and manners and customs of procedure of senators and representatives in the chambers of the national legislature. Presently, two men halted near us for a single moment and said one to the other, "Harris, if you'll do that for me, I'll never forget you, my boy." My new comrade's eye lighted pleasantly. The words had touched upon a happy memory, I thought. Then his face settled into thoughtfulness, almost into gloom. He turned to me and said, "Let me tell you a story. Let me give you a secret chapter of my life, a chapter that has never been referred to by me since its events transpired. Listen patiently and promise that you will not interrupt me." I said I would not, and he related the following strange adventure, speaking sometimes with animation, sometimes with melancholy, but always with feeling and earnestness. On the 19th of December, 1853, I started from St. Louis on the evening train bound for Chicago. There were only 24 passengers, all told. There were no ladies and no children. We were in excellent spirits, and pleasant acquaintanceships were soon formed. The journey bade fair to be a happy one. And no individual in the party, I think, had even the vaguest presentiment of the horrors we were soon to undergo. At 11 p.m. it began to snow hard. Shortly after leaving the small village of Weldon, we entered upon that tremendous prairie solitude that stretches its leagues on leagues of houseless dreariness far away toward the Jubilee settlements. The winds, unobstructed by trees or hills or even vagrant rocks, whistled fiercely across the level desert, driving the falling snow before it like spray from the crested waves of a stormy sea. The snow was deepening fast, and we knew by the diminished speed of the train that the engine was plowing through it with steadily increasing difficulty. Indeed, it almost came to a dead halt sometimes in the midst of great drifts that piled themselves like colossal graves across the track. Conversation began to flag. Cheerfulness gave place to grave concern. The possibility of being imprisoned in the snow on the bleak prairie 50 miles from any house presented itself to every mind and extended its depressing influence over every spirit. At 2 o'clock in the morning, I was roused out of an uneasy slumber by the ceasing of all motion about me. The appalling truth flashed upon me instantly. We were captives in a snowdrift. "All hands to the rescue!" Every man sprang to obey. Out into the wild night, the pitchy darkness, the billowy snow, the driving storm, every soul leaped with the consciousness that a moment lost now might bring destruction to us all. Shovels, hands, boards, anything, everything that could displace snow was brought into instant requisition. It was a weird picture, that small company of frantic men fighting the banking snows, half in the blackest shadow and half in the angry light of the locomotive's reflector. One short hour sufficed to prove the utter uselessness of our efforts. The storm barricaded the track with a dozen drifts while we dug one away, and worse than this, it was discovered that the last grand charge the engine had made upon the enemy had broken the fore and aft shaft of the driving wheel. With a free track before us, we should still have been helpless. We entered the car wearied with labor and very sorrowful. We gathered about the stoves and gravely canvassed our situation. We had no provisions whatever. In this lay our chief distress. We could not freeze, for there was a good supply of wood in the tender. This was our only comfort. The discussion ended at last in accepting the disheartening decision of the conductor, viz., that it would be death for any man to attempt to travel 50 miles on foot through snow like that. We could not send for help, and even if we could, it would not come. We must submit and await as patiently as we might, succor
or starvation. I think the stoutest heart there felt a momentary chill when those words were uttered. Within the hour, conversation subsided to a low murmur here and there about the car, caught fitfully between the rising and falling of the blast. The lamps grew dim, and the majority of the castaways settled themselves among the flickering shadows to think, to forget the present if they could, to sleep if they might. The eternal night, it surely seemed eternal to us, wore its lagging hours away at last, and the cold gray dawn broke in the east. As the light grew stronger, the passengers began to stir and give signs of life, one after another, and each in turn pushed his slouched hat up from his forehead, stretched his stiffened limbs, and glanced out of the windows upon the cheerless prospect. It was cheerless indeed. Not a living thing visible anywhere. Not a human habitation, nothing but a vast white desert. Uplifted sheets of snow drifting hither and thither before the wind, a world of eddying flakes shutting out the firmament of above. All day we moped about the cars, saying little, thinking much. Another lingering, dreary night, and hunger. Another dawning, another day of silence, sadness, wasting hunger, hopeless, watching for succor that could not come. A night of restless slumber, filled with dreams of feasting, wakings distressed with the gnawings of hunger. The fourth day went, and the fifth, 5 days of dreadful imprisonment. A savage hunger looked out at every eye. There was in it a sign of awful import, the foreshadowing of a something that was vaguely shaping itself in every heart, a something which no tongue dared yet to frame into words. The sixth day passed. The seventh dawned upon as gaunt and haggard and hopeless a company of men as ever stood in the shadow of death. It must out now. That thing which had been growing up in every heart was ready to leap from every lip at last. Nature had been taxed to the utmost. She must yield. Richard H. Gaston of Minnesota, tall, cadaverous, and pale, rose up. All knew what was coming. All prepared. Every emotion, every semblance of excitement was smothered. Only a calm, thoughtful seriousness appeared in the eyes that were lately so wild.
Gentlemen, it cannot be delayed longer. The time is at hand. We must determine which of us shall die to furnish food for the rest.
Mr. John J. Williams of Illinois rose and said,
Gentlemen, I nominate the Reverend James Sawyer of Tennessee.
Mr. William R. Adams of Indiana said,
I nominate Mr. Daniel Sloat of New York.
Mr. Charles J. Langdon,
I nominate Mr. Samuel A. Bowen of St. Louis.
Mr. Sloat,
Gentlemen, I design to decline in favor of Mr. John A. Van Nostrand, Jr. of New Jersey.
Mr. Gaston,
if there be no objection, the gentleman's desire will be acceded to.
Mr. Van Nostrand objecting, the resignation of Mr. Sloat was rejected. The resignations of Messrs. Sawyer and Bowen were also offered and refused upon the same grounds. Mr. A. L. Bascom of Ohio,
I move that the nominations now close and that the House proceed to an election by ballot.
Mr. Sawyer,
Gentlemen, I protest earnestly against these proceedings. They are in every way irregular and unbecoming. I must beg to move that they be dropped at once and that we elect the chairman of the meeting and proper officers to assist him and that we can go on with the business before us understandingly.
Mr. Bell of Iowa,
Gentlemen, I object. This is no time to stand upon forms and ceremonious observances. For more than 7 days we have been without food. Every moment we lose in idle discussion increases our distress. I am satisfied with the nominations that have been made. Every gentleman present is, I believe, and I for one do not see why we should not proceed at once to elect one or more of them. I wish to offer a resolution.
Mr. Gaston,
it would be objected to and have to lie over one day under the rules, thus bringing about the very delay you wish to avoid. The gentleman from New Jersey,
Mr. Van Nostrand,
Gentlemen, I'm a stranger among you. I have not sought the distinction that has been conferred upon me, and I feel a delicacy.
Mr. Morgan of Alabama,
I'll move the previous question.
The motion was carried, and further debate shut off, of course.
The motion to elect officers was passed, and under it Mr. Gaston was chosen chairman, Mr. Blake secretary, Messrs. Holcomb, Dyer, and Baldwin a committee on nominations, and Mr. R. M. Howland purveyor to assist the committee in making selections. A recess of half an hour was then taken, and some little caucusing followed. At the sound of the gavel, the meeting reassembled, and the committee reported in favor of Messrs. George Ferguson of Kentucky, Lucien Herman of Louisiana, and W. Messick of Colorado as candidates. The report was accepted. Mr. Rogers of Missouri.
Mr. President, the report being properly before the House now, I move to amend it by substituting for the name of Mr. Herman that of Mr. Lucius Harris of St. Louis, who is well and honorably known to us all. I do not wish to be understood as casting the least reflection upon the high character and standing of the gentleman from Louisiana. Far from it. I respect and esteem him as much as any gentleman here present possibly can, but none of us can be blind to the fact that he has lost more flesh during the week that we have lain here than any among us. None of us can be blind to the fact that the committee has been derelict in its duty, either through negligence or a graver fault, in thus offering for our suffrages a gentleman who, however pure his own motives may be, has really less nutriment in him. The chair. The gentleman from Missouri will take his seat. The chair cannot allow the integrity of the committee to be questioned save by the regular course under the rules. What action will the House take upon the gentleman's motion? Mr. Halliday of Virginia.
A move to further amend the report by substituting Mr. Harvey Davis of Oregon for Mr. Messick. It may be urged by gentlemen that the hardships and privations of a frontier life have rendered Mr. Davis tough. But, gentlemen, is this a time to cavil at toughness? Is this a time to be fastidious concerning trifles? Is this a time to dispute about matters of paltry significance? No, gentlemen, bulk is what we desire. Substance, weight, bulk. Those are the supreme requisites now, not talent, not genius, not education. I insist upon my motion.
Mr. Morgan, excitedly.
Mr. Chairman, I do most strenuously object to this amendment. The gentleman from Oregon is old, and furthermore is bulky only in bone, not in flesh. I ask the gentleman from Virginia if it is soup we want instead of solid sustenance, if he would delude us with shadows, if he would mock our suffering with an Oregonian specter. I ask him if he can look upon the anxious faces around him, if he can gaze into our sad eyes, if he can listen to the beating of our expectant hearts and still thrust this famine-stricken fraud upon us. I ask him if he can think of our desolate state, of our past sorrows, of our dark future, and still unpityingly foist upon us this wreck, this ruin, this tottering swindle, this gnarled and blighted and sapless vagabond from Oregon's hospitable shores. Never!
Applause. The amendment was put to a vote, and after a fiery debate, and lost, Mr. Harris was substituted on the First Amendment. The balloting then began. Five ballots were held without a choice. On the sixth, Mr. Harris was elected, all voting for him but himself. It was then moved that his election should be ratified by acclamation, which was lost in consequence of his again voting against himself. Mr. Radway moved that the House now take up the remaining candidates and go into an election for breakfast. This was carried. On the first ballot, there was a tie, half the members favoring one candidate on account of his youth, the half favoring the other on account of his superior size. The President gave the casting vote for the latter, Mr. Messick. This decision created considerable dissatisfaction among the friends of Mr. Ferguson, the defeated candidate, and there was some talk of demanding a new ballot, but in the midst of it, a motion to adjourn was carried, and the meeting broke up at once. The preparations for supper diverted the attention of the Ferguson faction from the discussion of their grievance for a long time, and then when they would have taken it up again, the happy announcement that Mr. Harris was ready drove all thought of it to the winds. We improvised tables by propping up backs of car seats and sat down with hearts full of gratitude to the finest supper that had blessed our vision for seven torturing days. How changed we were from what we had been a few short hours before. Hopeless, sad-eyed misery, hunger, feverish anxiety, desperation, then thankfulness, serenity, joy too deep for utterance now. That I know was the cheeriest hour of my eventful life. The winds howled and blew the snow wildly about our prison house, but they were powerless to distress us any more. I liked Harris. He might have been better done, perhaps, but I'm free to say that no man ever agreed with me better than Harris or afforded me so large a degree of satisfaction.
Messick was very well, though rather high-flavored, but for genuine nutritiousness and delicacy of fiber, give me Harris. Messick had his good points. I will not attempt to deny it, nor do I wish to do it, but he was no more fitted for breakfast than a mummy would be, sir. Not a bit. Lean, why, bless me, and tough. Ah, he was very tough. You could not imagine it. You could never imagine anything like it. Do you mean to tell me that... Do not interrupt me, please. After breakfast, we elected a man by the name of Walker from Detroit for supper. He was very good. I wrote his wife so afterward. He was worthy of all praise. I shall always remember Walker. He was a little rare, but very good. And then the next morning, we had Morgan of Alabama for breakfast. He was one of the finest men I ever sat down to. Handsome, educated, refined, spoke several languages fluently. Perfect gentleman. He was a perfect gentleman and singularly juicy. For supper, we had that Oregon patriarch, and he was a fraud. There is no question about it. Old, scraggy, tough. Nobody can picture the reality. I finally said, gentlemen, you can do as you like, but I will wait for another election. And Grimes of Illinois said, gentlemen, I will wait also. When you elect a man that has something to recommend him, I shall be glad to join you again. It soon became evident that there was a general dissatisfaction with Davis of Oregon, and so to preserve the goodwill that had prevailed so pleasantly since we had had Harris, an election was called, and the result of it was that Baker of Georgia was chosen. He was splendid. Well, well, after that we had Doolittle and Hawkins and McElroy. There was some complaint about McElroy because he was uncommonly short and thin, and Penrod and two Smiths and Bailey. Bailey had a wooden leg, which was a clear loss, but he was otherwise good. And an Indian boy, an organ grinder, and a gentleman by the name of Buckminster, a poor stick of a vagabond that wasn't any good for company and no account for breakfast. We were glad we got him elected before relief came. And so the blessed relief did come at last. Yes, it came one bright sunny morning just after election. John Murphy was the choice, and there was never a better, I am willing to testify. But John Murphy came home with us in the train that came to succor us and lived to marry the widow Harris, relict of our first choice. He married her and is happy and respected and prosperous yet. It was like a novel, sir. It was like a romance. This is my stopping place, sir. I must bid you goodbye. Any time that you can make it convenient to tarry a day or two with me, I shall be glad to have you. I like you, sir. I have conceived an affection for you. I could like you as well as I liked Harris himself, sir. Good day, sir, and a pleasant journey. He was gone. I never felt so stunned, so distressed, so bewildered in my life, but in my soul I was glad he was gone. With all his gentleness of manner and his soft voice, I shuddered whenever he turned his hungry eye upon me, and when I heard that I had achieved his perilous affection, and that I stood almost with the late Harris in his esteem, my heart fairly stood still. I was bewildered beyond description. I did not doubt his word. I could not question a single item in a statement so stamped with the earnestness of truth as his, but its dreadful details overpowered me and threw my thoughts into hopeless confusion. I saw the conductor looking at me. I said, "Who is that man?" He was a member of Congress once, and a good one, but he got caught in a snowdrift in the cars and liked to have been starved to death. He got so frostbitten and frozen up generally and used up for want of something to eat that he was sicking out of his head for 2 or 3 months afterward. He's all right now, only he's a monomaniac, and when he gets on that old subject, he never stops till he's eat up that whole carload of people he talks about. He would have finished the crowd by this time, only he had to get out here. He's got their names as pat as ABC. When he gets them all eat up but himself, he always says, "Then the hour for the usual election for breakfast having arrived, and there being no opposition, I was duly elected, after which, there being no objections offered, I resigned. Thus I am here." I felt inexpressibly relieved to know that I had only been listening to the harmless vagaries of a madman instead of the genuine experiences of a bloodthirsty cannibal. That's it. Happy Halloween, everybody. Hope you had as much fun tonight as I most assuredly did. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, our IT professional, Peter Godbold, he of Strictly Confidential, on the way in a matter of minutes, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program. Many thanks to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org. If you value what you hear on the horn, you value what Ben Birch does at whiterosesociety.org, and always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill, the Senate Judiciary Committee votes early next week on the White House nominee for Attorney General Michael Mukasey. Congressional Democrats say they're waiting to hear Mukasey's legal opinion on a form of torture known as waterboarding. So far, they say he has not provided his clear stance on the issue. Many Democrats say they will not vote for him unless he fully answers the question. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Defense Secretary Robert Gates announcing that all State Department convoys in Iraq will now be under U.S. military control. It is the latest step taken as part of an investigation into the shooting deaths of 17 Iraqi civilians involving Blackwater USA. President Bush says he'll again veto legislation expanding the federal children's health insurance program if the bill contains an increase in tobacco tax. Congress proposes paying for the $35 billion increase with tobacco taxes, including an extra 61 cents on each pack of cigarettes. The Federal Reserve met today, deciding to cut the key interest rate by 0.25 percentage point. Key rate now at 4.5%. That's down from the previous 4.75% rate. Democratic presidential frontrunner Hillary Clinton took some heat from her rivals during last night's televised debate held in Philadelphia. Senator Barack Obama and former Senator John Edwards both challenged Clinton's consistency and candor, especially on the question of driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. In Southern California, a 12-year-old boy admitted to playing with matches, which touched off the buckwheat fire near Santa Clarita. Flames blackened 38